represent the military veterans and the Deputy Minister of Defense, and let me greet as well some of the colleagues from the Department of Defense. Chair, the subject itself, as indicated in the agenda, is regards to Ndivugu. I want to allow my colleague here to be uploading, he's struggling a bit, to upload the presentation itself, and once it is shown on the screen, I'm going to be starting.
Just a brief background to the Umzumbugu case. It was December this year. Last year, I received an email from Honorable Cedric Frolic, is the chairperson, is the House chairperson. Who had received a correspondence from I think it was Malcolm Daines in relation to Umzimvubu regiment. So it affects 815 members, who are said that they were enlisted in July last year, but they remain unpaid since that time. So I then requested my support team to get back to Malcolm Daines and the team to ask for more information, because I did not want us to deal with issues in general. I asked them to list the names and first number, date when these people were engaged, or these military veterans were engaged, and dates when they were discharged. They since gave us that information, and which information I then submitted to the office of the to DOD via the PLO with an instruction that the information must be brought to the attention of the Chief HR Admiral Gubu, and the CEO, the PLO's name is, what is his name, Brian?
It's Mr. Fanele Monagani, Chair.
Yeah, Fanele Monagani. That was on the 2nd of June. I've looked at the trail, the paper trail, when we sent this message. And indeed, he wrote back to Brian. In fact, when he conveyed the message to the sector. Oh, I see. So yes, we are still struggling. Oh yes, you are connecting back. Yes. Okay, it's fine. I will wait for you. Thank you so much. Good. Great. So this is the Secretary of Defense colleagues. The system kicked them out, and so she didn't want to miss my opening remarks. She asked that we be patient with them. Are you back now, Secretary? Secretary, are you back? All right. Okay. So the background is that Brian, our support team, the committee secretary, sent the message to Sanele Bonagale, is the PLO in the Department of Defense, with the instruction that the information be conveyed to Admiral Gubu. Brian indeed sent the message to Admiral Kubu on the 3rd of June and copied Brian so that Brian is sleeping conveyed. It's a list of all the members who were recruited during that period, 815 of them, names, post numbers, when they arrived and they were sent home. And so that information is there. So our expectation, Brigadier Ramatswani, was for your team to look at each name as presented, indicate whether indeed this person ever reported, and the details thereof, what was the issue, why he or she remains unpaid, and of course you have a guiding principle that spells out who qualifies to be enlisted. So you simply just tell us whether this person was in fact enlisted, if he came and he had some issues, you indicate what issues that person has, and so on and so forth. So that's the information, General. General, have you received the information? Let me just check so that I know where we are going. Oh, General Ramadan is part of the team that got kicked out. Hello, Sedef, are you back?
I've not received her request for admission. I'm not sure whether they are experiencing further challenges.
Chair, if I may?
Yes, Minister?
It's probably because they would be in the same venue.
Trying
to, and that's going to affect them. We'll call and try and find out exactly what is happening.
What the issue is. Okay, that's fine, Minister. We'll wait because they are central to all these four presentations.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Minister. Brian, maybe we can quickly take the seventh item, the briefing on that correspondence. Are you ready to do that?
All right, sir.
Just keep an eye so that or at least Velim is also is another host. Okay, just speak to it, Brian. The team to come back.
Right. This is the correspondence which we have received. Actually, the correspondence was received from the Speaker's office. The correspondence is coming from the Institute for Justice and Reconciliation. They are inviting Chair. I've tried to determine from them whether it is only the Chair or along with four members of the committee that they wish to come to the gathering that they are inviting the committee to. I've not yet received a response from them, but then the invitation is to orientate members of parliament on the South African National Action Plan on Women, Peace and Security. The event is going to be on the 19th of August, of September, that is in Cape Town. The hotel where it's going to be has not been indicated yet. But then this is also accompanied by a letter from the Speaker which endorses the attendance of members to this particular event. And that is all, sir. Thank you.
Okay. colleagues, the date is the 19th of September.
That is correct, sir.
Okay. So when you receive the correspondence from the Office of the Speaker?
I received this correspondence late on Monday.
Late on Monday. Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
Colleagues, this is the correspondence. We will distribute it to all of you. And
Chairperson, we're cracking your waist. Chairperson, you're cracking your waist.
Colleagues, do you want to say comment on this? I switched off the video now. Can you hear me? Is it clear?
Yeah, much better now. Could you just repeat what you have said?
I wanted just to check if there are any comments on this correspondence.
Chairperson?
Yes, you are back.
We are back just on a laptop. We are trying on the bigger screen, but we can proceed, I think, with the Umzubu regiment presentation, and by the time we're done, we should be able to connect to the bigger screen.
We will do. Just give us 1 minute to conclude this item.
Okay.
So then come
all
to
right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. yes. Any comment, colleagues, you want to raise on this correspondence?
Chairperson, from my side, obviously, any initiative like this is a good initiative. So I'm not just quite sure in terms of what they will discuss and to what extent it will have influence on the Defence Force itself or whether it is in general. So obviously I think the moment that we have got more details in terms of exactly what will be discussed and who will be the speakers, it will obviously help us. I think ask some of our ladies to represent us because they are part of the sector, but it must not be only necessarily women that must attend, but to the extent it will impact on our work with regards to the Defence Force. I from what I quickly read through and that was a quick glance, I'm not quite sure how relevant it is. But, you know, any initiative like that, surely must be supported. Thank you.
No, it's fine. Any other colleagues? We can simply leave it at that. We'll then distribute the correspondence to all the members. All right? Okay, the SECDEF and the team are back. I was on the point where I was just introduced, was introducing the issue that the honorary member, Cedric Frolic, received correspondence from Malcolm Daines, who was complaining that 815 members who were enlisted at the Umzimvubu regiment in July last year remained unpaid. they were being pushed from pillar to post. I since asked my support team to go back to Captain Daines to ask for more information, particularly the names, force numbers, when the people arrived at the regiment, Umzimvubu regiment, and when they were sent back home, Julie complied and sent me a list of all the members that he was speaking, that he was speaking on behalf. And I then asked the team, to my support team, to send the information, the correspondence together with the list of all the members, 815 of them, to the ministry via the PLO. Bonagele is the PLO, with an instruction that it must be brought to the attention of the chief HR Admiral Kubu. From what I can see on the email, the PLO did that. He sent it to the chief HR and copied Brian Manji, our secretary. That was on the 3rd of June. We were hoping that when the team comes back, it presents the principles which are fine, that underpin the recruitment, and also speak to each one of those people listed in the list, indicating the state the fellow presented and why he is not paid, if the status was confirmed that indeed he or she was duly enlisted. So that's the information Brigadier Rematswane will take us through. But before Brigadier takes us through, have you looked at the list, Brigadier? Sorry, General. Have you looked at the list? Yes, General Ramazani?
Chairperson, honorable members, once again, good morning. And the greetings to the Minister of Defence and the Deputy Minister of Defence, and as well as the colleagues that are here around with us today. Chair, it's all about Ndungu. I need to indicate, Chair, that we did not benefit much besides from the introduction that you were making due to the audio problem after we were able to link on. But with your permission, Chair, I am ready to continue with the presentation. And in order to start the presentation, Chair, it's all a matter that arose. It's a subject matter that arose from July 2021 with the unrest in the country, especially in KZN, as well as in Kaohsiung, where the South African Army was required or expected to deploy in order to stabilize the situation. And in doing so, the SA Army had an authorization through presidential means signed off by the Commander-in-Chief of the South African National Defence Force. And following that, the presidential authorization, the Army issued out a media release, a media statement, in which the media statement was calling upon members of the reserve force to report for duty in their own units, in their respective units, and ready with their equipment for utilization or for employment. Now, this media statement is quite clear in the sense that it requires the members of the reserve force to report in their respective units. That means it is to the exclusion of anybody else who would not have been a member of the reserve force at that point in time. And moving forward, Chair, just to indicate here, and it's important where we are indicating this, it's in relation to the situation that came up then in Ndungu. These are the provisions of the Defence Act. the Defense Act 42 of 2002, Section 11, and it makes provision for the following members to be employed within the South African National Defense Force. Members of the regular force who serve full-time until reaching their age of retirement, expiry of contract term of service, or otherwise discharged from the Defense Force in accordance with the law. The second one is members of the Reserve Force who serve on a part-time basis for such periods as they have been contracted for, unless their service is terminated in accordance with the law. It also makes provision, Chair, for members of the auxiliary services, as they would serve for such period as the Minister of Defense may determine. And there are other provisions with regard to members of the auxiliary services. Chair, the next governance mechanism in terms of the Reserve Force, which talks the enlistment of the Reserve Force, is as follows. And these are the general regulations that are dated the 2nd of June 2017. They make certain prohibitions on the part of the South African National Defense Force with regards to employing former members of the Defense Force within the reserves. And it therefore states that we may not enroll as the Defense Force, the Chief of the South African National Defense Force may not enroll as a family member of the Defense Force if that former member has resigned from or left the Defense Force on condition that he or she would not accept or seek reappointment. And also, if the original ground for termination of service in the Defense Force militates against enrollment. And quite important, in relation to Unzinsuku's situation, Chair, is the second last bullet. The services of the former regular force member were terminated in terms of Section 59. It also has got some subsections there of the Defense Act. But what this relates to, Chair, it is relating to this section specifically with discharges, specifically with imprisonment, specifically with dismissal. And therefore, then it is prohibited that these members need to be employed. And the lastly, Chairperson, is the fact that the former member that has left the Defense Force for on medical grounds or psychological reasons. This therefore means if you have to take back this member, enlist him as a member of the Reserve Force, that would mean that he is going to produce recent and conclusive evidence of recovery, which would have then been verified by the Surgeon General. Now, these provisions, Chair, are very key when we talk about the situation in Ndumbuk. Now, one needs to emphasize the fact that, bear in mind that the media statement and the call at the time, it was not limited to Ndumbuk. It had the call across the entire country. Now, therefore, then, Chair, subsequent to the release of that of the media release, there was then an army instruction. There was an infantry formation instruction. The infantry formation is one of the formations that we have in the army that employs mainly a category of soldiers that are called infantiers. Mainly these are the soldiers that are deployed for utilization under these circumstances where it relates to OPROSPA and other missions as we do in the army. But then it was for the activation, just to emphasize the point of the general regulations, whether there is an instruction to this effect or no instruction, you just know you are a unit of the Reserve Force. And whatever that you have to do, you've got to follow the general regulations as provided. And then members of the reserves were to report to their respective units ready for deployment, and this is what it was saying. But then it appeared at the time that there are people who reported in the and these people who reported in the they were not enlisted as members of the reserves, and the intent was for enlistment. All right, in the Defense Force, Chair, enlisting members of the reserve force is what we Chair, I think maybe I'm not sure, Chair, if you can hear me now.
Yeah, I can hear you fully. No,
you can hear him fully. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah,
continue. Okay, continue. Thanks, Mr. Murray.
And therefore then, Chair, as I was explaining, it appeared therefore then at the time we have to deal with two categories of people. We always would want to build capacity in the SNDF. And the other thing is the fact that enlistment of members who are interested to the members of the South African Army Reserve is a continuous process. That's something that we do every time. But then the process that needs to be followed. And that is in accordance with those general regulations. That some members, although you are requesting, you may not necessarily be enlisted in the South African Army. But further to the informed information, scholars in fact now, this is one of the things that came out on the voice note. That the voice note was dictated on the Umzinvubu regiment. Now, this is what happened with the voice note stated that all those who are soldiers should take the opportunity. So all those who are soldiers should take the opportunity to report the Umzinvubu regiment, whether enlisted or not. Now, I am paraphrasing on this very one chair because there are a lot of things that we would have had, but to sum it up all, whether you are enlisted, if that's the way to report the Umzinvubu. I am not sure, Chair, if I am still audible.
Yes,
because I can.
Yes, you are fully audible.
Thank you, Honorable Mare. I think maybe the chairperson, maybe the microphone there has got a challenge. I am not sure if I must continue if the chairperson cannot hear us.
Yes.
I don't know. I need permission.
No. Continue, General. Continue. I'll follow, even though it has some problems, but I think the problem is on this side. There's a bit of instability on the network, but this side, but continue, because the colleagues seem to follow your presentation very well.
Thank you, Chair. I am on the second last bullet, wherein the members that were there at the time, and I'll speak about this at that time, if we're talking about 808 members who reported at the regiment for enlistment. Now, all these members, the total 808, were not members of the reserve. In other words, they were not enlisted at the time. And only a few of these numbers that reported could be enlisted. Now, this category of people, They were ex-members of the SANDF. Some were civilians, just to qualify the word civilians. Yes, after integration in 1994, we had a situation where some members were demilitarized, especially those who were in the finance environment. So indications were that these civilians is that category of people that demilitarized. Now, when they demilitarized, they immediately became sisters. And when they became sisters, they were out of the Defense Act. No longer falling within the Defense Act as such, and therefore no longer within the military disciplinary code. And therefore there were those who did not integrate. And therefore then all of them never enlisted as members of the reserve. At the same time, as I indicated, Chairperson, there were reserve members of the regiment that also reported. Now, these were legitimate members of the regiment. They come in, these are reserve force members, no doubt about them. And they were taken in, and they had to be deployed for the operation as it was intended. And therefore, Chair, just to indicate this point, because this is very, very important, the situation in Umzinvubu, members were expected to report to their unit. What we found here, the members came from different provinces, as far as Durban, as far as Cape Town, Western Cape, as far as Gauteng. They were all going down to Umzinvubu regiment. Now, the issue is this situation was unique when it comes to Umzinvubu regiment. And in all other reserve force units, which were also doing the same task, by the way, we didn't see this situation in the manner that it prevailed in Umzinvubu regiment. Now, the members who reported were accommodated at the regiment, and even though they were not enlisted. Now, this is a point of inquiry for the South African Army. We are quite interested in this, to inquire on this very one. The normal practice here, Chairperson, is the fact that you go there, you want to enlist, you therefore then have got to leave your documents, your applications, your form, including police clearances, including everything, and then you go back. You will then be called once your file has been successfully enlisted. And therefore we have this situation. So I am saying this is a point of inquiry in the South African Army as it stands right now with the inquiry that was convened. There were also allegations of new appointees, also a point of inquiry. We do not disregard the fact that the unit would have been overwhelmed with the number of people that were there. But that practice is a concern for the South African Army. Now, the members, as they reported, as I said, they were kept there. But starting mid-July up until mid-August, thereabouts, they were leaving, not at the same time, all of them, due to other challenges that were there, which I'll talk about administratively. But by the end of July, there was nobody. The last batch indications were that the 25th of August, all these members were out of Umzimvubu Regiment. In fact, they even requested some of them, because of the areas they were coming from, to be supported in terms of transport arrangement, etc., etc. Now, Chair, moving out of that slide, the identified administrative challenges were as follows. In mid-August, it was brought to the attention of the Army headquarters through the HR section and Director Army Reserve that there were administrative challenges in Umzimvubu Regiment. Now, these administrative challenges, there were quite a number of them. One of them is that there were people there who are not members of the reserve force. They cannot be instead. There were also challenges, for instance, of rations and other logistic items as it was required. And then a decision was taken. We've got to send immediately senior officers to go to Umzimvubu Regiment to assess the nature of the problem and to resolve whatever problems that were there. Within that team, there was also HR team that made some, that did a feet on the ground inspection, and at the time, there were 808 members that could be verified at Umzimvubu Regiment. Now, the team found that the members that were there, some have got criminal records, etc., and they transgressed the military disciplinary code at the time they were serving, and those who did not integrate, and some civilians, in the name of Peters, even though they might be using force numbers, but they have been militarized, as I have indicated. And as a result of that, a decision was taken by the two saying all members, they should immediately leave the unit and to return back to their unit. Surely, with this observation, therefore, there was no way that these members were going to be enlisted. And further to this, it was the proper verification of files for enlistment. Because then files at the time, given the number of the files, they were still to be verified in Umzimvubu Regiment. And upon completion of the verification of the files for the enlistment, a certain payment were activated for those who qualified for enlistment. And the first payment came out in December 2021 and resulted in allegations of non-payment. Now, the non-payment issue, check, this is where all the allegations started and became very strong in terms of the fact that there are some people who have not been paid on this from Umzimvubu. And members not meeting the enlistment criteria were the main reason for the non-payment. And following these developments and a number of other things that I mentioned in the previous slide, administrative challenges, etc., if we found that it was necessary that we have to convene an inquiry that was dated the 28th of December 2021, and any intended payment was to be stopped pending the outcome of the investigation. Now, it was necessary to stop the payment. We have to know and to be clear what is being paid from the Army headquarters, right? What is being paid and what has been paid and why this was being paid? Because here we are dealing with a state and resources. And therefore then in whatever that we are doing, we must just double check and triple check to make sure it is in accordance with the law. And while some of the members of Umzimvubu Regiment were deployed in KZN, those members' payments were being effected. There was no issue around them. And then, Chairperson, if you would ask what is the progress in terms of the inquiry that we have put in place, and the progress with regard to the inquiry was completed and ended to the convening authority. It was referred back due to some shortcomings that have been identified. And such shortcomings had to be addressed. Right now, as we speak, the inquiry is undergoing a legal review. And we foresee that this will be completed here around about the end of September, and then we will know. It's important that we deal with this thing here, because what we want to do is to correct ourselves as a South African Army, as well as to take actions where wrongdoings would have been clearly visible, and we then will have to take action around that. Chairperson, this is the status with regards to the payment. If we want to say who has been paid and who has not been paid, this slide talks to that. We found 135 were eligible for payment, and these members were accordingly enlisted. However, 673 of these members, they were excluded, the reasons being the following. Previous convictions, as I indicated, of course, and some of the members who were former members of the South African National Defence Force, they left with a clean record. But when they were out there in civilian life, they have now accumulated some criminal acts in their names. And therefore, as a result, clearly, you can no longer enlist them. Because that's what the general regulation says. We cannot do that. And then, obviously, the former members who did not integrate at all, we're talking about CBDC states, non-state current forces, the SADF, and these were in the main, those who reported there and had not integrated. But, here, we had a total amount of 68 people who could be enlisted. And they have been enlisted, this is, they are part of the 673, which is the indicator there. The issue here, these members, where their enlistment was completed at a time we have already made a decision that says that the payment must be stopped. And for the reasons that we want to make sure, these are state resources and we therefore have to be sure what it is that we are doing. Now all this is still part of this inquiry that we are talking about here. In summary, the enlisted out of the 808 is 203 and they're not enlisted, 605. They have not been enlisted, the 605 at all, and for reasons that we have just indicated. Just to give an overview, Chair, this is a summary of resources spent in terms of the time period when the members were all there in Umzimvubu Regiment. Now, second last bullet, I want to emphasize on that. The salary projection, arguably everybody else has to be paid. You are running into 23.9 million. And so the total that we would have processed as we're talking about ration and all that has been listed from the first slide right up to the second last bullet would have incurred a total of 28.5 million rand. But at least this has been reduced. We have stopped this and we want clarity. We want to be sure what is happening here. In terms, of course, if there is no supporting law that says pay this, we are using the Defence Act, we are using the general regulations, and that is what we have to stick to. And therefore, then in conclusion, Chairperson, as I indicated, this is the progress with regard to the Board of Inquiry. This is what I indicated. The convening authority is going to get this. Clearly, as you are busy with the Board of Inquiry, there comes a time it has got to be completed. It has got to be handed to the convening authority. The convening authority will go through it and to say that I am happy with the Board of Inquiry, I'm going to proceed. And therefore, if there are shortcomings in the Board of Inquiry, they've got to be clarified, those shortcomings. And this is what has happened with regard to this Board of Inquiry. End of September is going to be handed over to the convening authority. And like I'm saying, Chair, it's important. The members who could not be enlisted and have got criminal records, there is no way that the South African Army was going to release them. It is just not proper. It wouldn't be proper in accordance with the law. And I just want to indicate, Chair, we through the interest information, if those members that were there not accepted, there is a provision. This kind of a document is what we give feedback to the member to say that you as the US given us your application, we have seen your application. And all that is happening there is more in line with the general regulations. And if you have not been accepted, that is what is going to appear in the letter that will be handed over to you. Chair, I submit this as a presentation. I want to submit over and over back to the Secretary for Defense. Thank you so much.
Chair, we are ready to take questions.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you.
I was just saying, Chair, we are ready for the question.
Okay. may I make this request to you, SecDef, that I'll ask Brian to fly the list of these members. I want to send the list back to you once again, so that your team, applying the principles that have just been presented by General Ramatswana, finish us with the remarks on each candidate. Can you start it, Brian? I'll then take comments from each member. This is the list that we received from the complainants, from Danes who's representing these people, right? The reason the matter is on the agenda is because the department did not respond. Like I said earlier on, that we sent this list to you, to the ministry via the PLO, for the attention of Admiral Kubu on the 3rd of June. All we need, so that we close the file, all right, is you indicate, just giving us the remarks pertaining to the status of each case, so that we can then send this matter back to Honorable Frolic in Parliament and say, this is the response from the department, please forward it to the complainants. This is the list. Okay, I think it goes right up to 815. So that we are sure, Brigadier, that we are talking about the same people. But the way you are presenting, it looks as though we are talking about the same people. But for confirmation, please remark on each case. Please remark on each case, so that we can then close the file with the remarks. If they have any objection to the remarks you make, they will then take the objections. They will then take the matter up with you. Do you agree, Secretary, for this before I ask the colleagues to comment? This approach?
The approach, because if you look at the presentation, we were giving the round figures, we were obvious to now go back, because then there would be that information from our police in the RES to those people who constituted the 808, and then they will contrast the information against the names that you have given. So I think we will then populate that spreadsheet and come back to you to give you an update on each one of those, because in the presentation it stated who qualified and who was paid and who didn't qualify and for what reason. So we'll break it down to individual, so that then it becomes useful to the members of the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Secretary. Colleagues, are there any comments on the matter?
Yes, sir. For my I've got quite a few. The first one, I just want to start off with this letter, this list. If I had heard you correctly, Chair, you said that when you received that letter from Captain Danes, you asked Brian to forward that to the department and to confirm. Now, for the sector to only respond now, to say that they will come back, I mean, you know, with the greatest of respect, that is not acceptable. You've given them ample time to respond. It's now middle of September. You've already done that, seems to me, about June already, June, July. So you know, why did they not understood your request and instructions? That is just totally unacceptable. And it means that, you know, we don't have all the information because the department didn't respond to what you requested. That's the first thing. The second thing is, as obviously the Board of Inquiry, and it seems like there's quite a lot of information that the department hasn't taken into consideration, according to the executive now. Now, that poses the question whether the Board of Inquiry has taken that into consideration. And in terms of this presentation, the Board of Inquiry will be completed by the end of this month. That's in 2 weeks' time. So, and I mean, that's already nearly it's more than a year since this played out in Umzungugu, and nearly a year after the Board of Inquiry has been commissioned. So this is kind of very, very slow, and it's a very concerning to me. I just want to go back to the presentation, and I just wanted to ask, on the presentation of the call-up where it was explained, there was a SA Army Instructions 53/2021 that clearly gives the indication or the impression that it is not only reserve force members to be called up, but only also others to be enlisted to be called up. And then the voice note, you know, there was this voice note that they said, surely that voice note is there, and hopefully they have listened to the voice note. And I don't know if I'm correct, my information is correct. My information is that's the voice note coming from Colonel Keaton, who is the officer commanding of Umzumbuva Regiment. Now, anybody who has listened to that voice note can clearly get the instruction in that voice note. And even in terms of the administration around, that person was specifically said, come get people to line up. You will be part of the administration. So there seems to be things in the presentation that gives the impression that this is allegations or it is alleged and things like that, when in fact, you know, there are some at least prima facie evidence in many of these cases. Then I just want to say, you know, there seems to be this 850 names. My information is the same as yours, Chairperson. It's 815, 7 died subsequently. And now the department is only talking about the 808. But if all 815 is eligible to be paid, then it means that those who have died subsequently, their families have got rights as well. So we must go back to the 815, and they must verify that 815. Then I just wanted to, you know, and the next slide specifically gives, there was an allegation of new appointees to manage the reserve force. The voice note is very clear. It's absolutely very, very clear about who must assist with the administration and the management of that. And that should be acknowledged by the general. And it seems like it is not. Then I want to go to just the slide where it talks about the payments. Now, the 115 that were eligible for paid, my information is only 56 of those members were actually paid. So in other words, certain members were paid for a month, not for the full period or the call-up period, but for a month. So the Army, the SA Army bank confirmation letter gives actually those 135 names, and that is available, and we know that. So why was only 56 paid, and then obviously when will the next be paid as well? You know, what my question just is, were anybody paid from GOC support? And if so, why was there anybody paid from GOC support? And then what was the amount? And please explain that to us if that is the case. The ones that were actually paid, that 56, was it part of this or were they paid by the DOD, and how did that work? Then in terms of that preliminary findings, my information is that the bus transport were arranged for the people to go to Umzumbuva. Now, if that is the case, who paid for the bus transport to Umzumbuva for all these members, and who made those arrangements? Clearly, it cannot be just done by anybody, because that is quite a sum of money. And for anybody to arrive there from wherever by bus, you know, it just that doesn't fall out of the sky. So that's very, very strange to me. And obviously, we need to know who made those arrangements and for those people. Then I specifically want to know that just in the bottom of that page, it says enlistee salary projection. Now, is that the hypothetical one, or is that what will be paid out? Because if it is projected, it seems like it is planned to be paid out. Now, is that the rest of the members? And for how many people is that 24 million rand that we are talking about there? then on the board of inquiry, I hope that that will come to the committee, and that we will not sit in a situation that at the end of the year we still don't have a copy of the board of inquiry. The last page, Chairperson, there is a letter that apparently was given, according to this presentation, to everybody who were there. So in other words, the 815 members. The letter that we have seen here is only the first page of, I don't know how many pages in that letter. So that is not fully disclosed to us. And then who signed that letter? And my information is that letter certainly didn't go to all the 815 members. So that comes back to your initial request for the 815 to be vetted and to tell us why, you know, they were not recognized. So it seems like there is a number of things that is still outstanding. For me, it is very important, the Board of Inquiry, the voice call, the voice note call-up, is that Colonel Keaton, or who is that in the voice note? Because that is very clear. And on whose instructions did he acted? What was the roles of General Chalisi, General Moni, and Colonel Keaton in this matter? And will there be any consequence management with regards to anybody who's done this? I accept the framework that was given to us, and I don't say that is not true. That is the legal case, but we know that what happened here was outside of this legal framework. Somebody or a group of people authorized this and drive this, obviously illegally or at least irregularly. That will impact on our audit again, and that's why the Auditor General is present today. So are there going to be, and that's my question again then to the Minister and the Sector, consequence management, will that also be just put in the bottom drawer, file 13 again, and only be talked about and nobody be held accountable? Thank you very much, Chair. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much, Dr. Basopo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and the ministers and the deputy minister. I have the same concerns as raised by the Honorable Mr. Marais about the delay of not postponed to the letter that was sent to the subject, but I want to go further why they didn't respond to a letter that was sent to them. Then number two and the last point. For me, Chair, the information given to us and the processes that are being followed, I want to submit here that in my view, the department is on track. And because if you look at this matter, it's very complicated. And for us to take a decision, we are supposed to take an informed decision, knowing very well what happened. And therefore, I am proposing that let's accept the process set by the department, but and wait for the outcome. But all what we need to do here is just to set a time frame. To say on such and such a date, we expect a feedback. So that would be submission, Chair, for this, because as I look at it, it's very complicated and it needs a thorough discussion, I mean investigation, which I believe in my view, in terms of the presentation by the department is on track in doing so. So I'm proposing that, Chair, concretely, that we as the committee, let's allow that process, but there should be time frame set for it. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Okay. I don't see any other hand. Sec Def, Minister, you may want to comment, but you'll indicate when you want to come in. But let me just take Sec Def for now, or General Ramadan.
Chairperson, I would allow General Ramanthani to address the issues because they are really largely around the issues of deployment. But also just to say, Chairperson, we have tracked through our channel. The report was sent to the office of the CHR, and unfortunately it was not really shared with our colleagues in the army. But as we always do, we commit that we will populate the spreadsheet and then give an update on the information that is required, because we really want to cooperate with the portfolio committee, and we will do so and also update on the follow-up inquiry as stated by the presentation. But I will hand over to General Ramanthani.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Chair, I need to start off by saying the following. The matter with regards to wounds is a matter which we have subjected into the Board of Inquiry to end investigation as such. And as I was going down through the presentation, I tried to indicate what are those areas that we are worried about in terms of us, which has led us to say, let us establish this particular investigation so that we can look at this area. Now, if I may just once again, with your permission, Chairperson, just indicate what we said during the presentation. The first thing we were worried about the people who were kept there in the unit. Like I indicated, the fact that when you do an enlistment, it's very clear. You hand in your documentation. There is no need for you to be accommodated to the unit. And it's just same thing like I'm applying for a job. If I may use those words, we have understood that part. And with regards to the new appointees, we have understood that part. It's one of the areas that we think that we subjecting this matter into an inquiry. Resource utilization. In terms of the amount of money that has been spent, we have to bring this out. We're talking here state resources. And the other issue is with regards to the voice vote. The reason why I am trying to list all of these aspects here is to indicate that these are subject of an investigation. And then being subject of an investigation, Chair, I need your protection that I need not dwell into the details of this. In my position in the South African Army, should I begin to talk about the voice notes and to bring up something around the voice notes, I think I would be unfair to the investigation that is going on. Just as an example. And therefore, there were also administrative issues that came out. And the other biggest question that we have, Umzimvubu is not just the only reserve force unit that the South African Army has. There are reserve force units throughout the country. And therefore, the issue is, why Umzimvubu? These things, all of these things, Chair, they've got to come out from the investigation itself. We've got to know what is it that has transpired in Umzimvubu, and the Board of Inquiry needs to cover us in this regard. I just want to respond to the issue that the fact that the Board of Inquiry has taken quite a long time to be done. Well, of course, the one issue that you abused it through the investigation will lead you to another. And I don't want to speak on behalf of the investigator. But the investigator did present the board when it was completed and it was found to be having shortcomings. And as a result of those shortcomings, it was referred back. And referred back right now, as I speak, it is in for legal review. And legal review, the time frames, they are to be completed by the end of September. And thereafter it will then be given to the convening authority. And the convening authority has got to satisfy themselves with regards to this case so that they make informed decision with regards to the board. And this is where we are now. So the Board of Inquiry was not started, it would not have started here in the 28th of December as we indicated. It was because of what we were observing and all the issues that we were realizing and culminating into non-payment in the local region. So therefore, the inquiry was important in this regard. The issue with regards to the 850 names and some of the members who have passed on, Chair, this issue is going to be looked at, should be also an outcome of the Board of Inquiry. I don't want to say how far is the board now and begin to discuss the content of the board. I think if I do that, it will not be correct of me to do that. So, but if we want to say, in the army we spoke about a figure of 808, and we need to say, we as things stand right now, we are going to have to go back to the Board of Inquiry. The Board of Inquiry sure, and obviously I don't want to talk about the content. One of the things that we should be able to see is who has improved the language. So I will leave it at that, Chairman. And obviously I've already said about the appointment. If I begin to talk about the appointment and what it is saying and all that, I will not be doing justice to the investigation that is currently going on. Payments only to 56 members that have been paid, Chair, that is not the record that we have. And so on this one, it's not 56 members who have been paid. That is not the record that we have. What we have is what we have presented. Is anybody paid from the GOC support? The GOC support, have you paid anybody? The members that were reporting at Umzimfu, it would depend which formation do they belong in. In the main, the biggest of the members, they were those who were infantiers. So they would have been under the GOC of infantry formation. There will be those who have reported there. Just to indicate to you, Chair, out of that same number, there are people who are in other services like the Navy who came in. But those ones were not there. So the biggest number would have come from the infantry. The number would have come from artillery and the number would have come from armor. Just as an example. But what then we did was to put a global picture of how many have been taken in the South African Army for this. Chair, then there was the issue about the English chiefs. That man which is there. I did indicate in the presentation to say that why we are indicating that particular slide. And I indicated that if you look from serial number one, right before the second last bullet, those calls have been checked. But the second last bullet would have been a projection to say, if you were to pay all 800, the number of 800 plus that you were to pay, that is what the state would have been kept. It's important that we project this particular slide. And then the total the state would have lost has been the last bullet, which we then indicated there. Now, if you want to say the payment, how much is that? It's 2.2 million. But then you take the 2.2 million and you add with the rest before your second last bullet. And that is where we are, Chair. And there is, I just want to check if more or less I am covering everything here. Chairperson, I need to be advised if there is something else that I've left out. But deliberately, Chair, any subject matter which is a subject of inquiry, I really would request your protection that I do not go into that. And the reason for that being that I must respect the investigation that is going on. And if I talk about something that is in the investigation, then that will be something else. Chair, I want to hand over back to the President for this.
Chairperson, I think that Chair concludes the response to the questions that have been raised.
Okay. There's something amiss about the whole thing. Let's admit, and it explains why it's subject of the matter, the whole matter is subject of the Board of Inquiry. There are findings, but it's reported that the findings have their own weaknesses, and the convening authority has since called for more information, and the information has since been produced and submitted to the convening authority, and the convening authority is assessing, evaluating the evidence, including the new evidence, and upon concluding, we then make a final determination on the matter. Is that the conclusion of the process, Brigadier General? General?
Yes. Chair, I need to just, with your permission, just to assist you, Chair. It's Major General Roman Zwana, Chair. It is for the first time, but you are forgiven, Chairperson. May I then say, Chair, you have summarized the Chairperson, and thank you for that. I've got nothing to add. You have really summarized the Chair. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much, General. My apologies. And back then, you know, the highest authority would be a sergeant. So now, if I confuse the ranks, please, my apologies. General, it's fine. I think let's leave it at that for now, and then allow that process to conclude, and that as soon as that process has concluded, we would appreciate if you come and then do a presentation to us, because, like I said earlier on, that there's something that is not
that's not adding up.
I think that's I was looking for that word, Mr. Mare, and that, but we'll not prejudge the matter. We will patiently wait for the process that we have undertaken to conclude, and then look at it, and we would want that people who in the system, in the establishment, or in the SNDF for the department, who caused the department to incur unnecessary expenditure, that they be consequence management. We want to emphasize that point, consequence management, so that this thing it's nipped from the bud. We can't get the department being caused to incur unnecessary expenditure in view of the budget constraints that the department is working under, you know, and so there's got to be discipline, and the discipline that with especially people who are in the commanding echelons of the SNDF, because it looks as though some people have to answer, and let's allow that process to happen. So I note Honorable Thabo Motle's hand. Maybe he will be the last person to speak on the matter before I ask the minister to conclude.
There's just three of mine that was not responded to.
You think that those three can't wait for the report, the final report on the investigation? They speak to the person.
First of all, if you allow me, let's wait for the Board of Inquiries. I've got no problem in principle with that. But then we must know that the matters that were raised today will be addressed in the Board of Inquiries. Otherwise, General Ramatswana could have responded to that. That's the one thing. Then the question on the on the consequence management, I'm glad you raised it, and that was a question to the sector and the minister. And then the last one was just that letter, where I was just asking whether that letter on the last page of the conclusion, whether that letter was issued to all 815 or 808 that is still alive today. I mean, that is not something that can be reputed in a board of inquiry or compromise. So if the general can just respond whether all 815 or 808 have received that letter. Thank you very much.
Okay, it's fine. I will grant you the last question, Mr. Murray, because the rest will still be able to raise them when they come back to us with their report on the the board of inquiry. And maybe what we need to add is to know when is that process likely to conclude, so that we don't wait in perpetuity. But the minister has listened to the whole presentation and the discussion. Maybe she would want to comment on that as well. And Thabo, you are next on the matter. Maybe let me just take you before I go to the minister.
Honourable. Thank you very much, Chair. I think on your last assertion, you have covered me. I equally wanted to solicit from them as to how long or when are they anticipating concluding their investigation, so that we are also in a position to schedule accordingly, so that we can then call them to come back and brief us with regard to those developments. But if we leave here without an indication as to when are they going to conclude their investigation, we will not know as well when to call them or put into our program a session to engage with them on the matter. So I think that's important. That must be done. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Mutle. And but the information that we have requested, just a comment on each name, obviously can't wait for the process to conclude. We just need to know the status of each case as it stands. Of course, the information is subject to the final determination on the matter, because you may come back and say, no, look, we have reviewed the status of this case and that case and that case, and the final position now is X on those cases. So we'll take that information as a work in progress until you make a final determination on the matter. I see a potential fruitless and wasteful expenditure here, but I'm not making that point. I don't want to prejudge the matter. Let's allow the due process to run its course. Minister, you have a concluding word on this one.
Thank you, Chair. May I keep my camera off? Chair, I want to commit to come back to you on by when, before the weekend, just to indicate to you by when defense thinks that Board of Inquiry would have concluded this business, so that we can come back and account. The second commitment that I do make is that I want to agree firstly with the committee. When I first got this report, I thought something was very off here. There is no way. I understood that the country went into a kind of panic, that people who may not have necessarily been soldiers may have wanted to come to stand up for the defense of the country and would have gone there. But those people would not be wrong in my own summation. It would be the people who accepted them without explaining and keeping them there. It would be the people who did not explain and help these people to go back. So that board of inquiry must establish the facts so that we can come back to you. I want to agree with the committee that that which we say was the correct people who are on the enlistment, that information can readily be made available to the committee. If we are clear that all those that we kept and those that we kept will have paid, I do not see why that information would be held back from the committee, whereas the board of inquiry actually goes after what is official. And then the last thing that I want to say is that, yes, we're becoming a department that keeps on promising to act and do not act on people who do wrong things. And I've said it very publicly, Chairperson and committee members. When you write and you give an instruction for action, and the people that you are instructing are not acting on their subordinates, you have absolutely no other course but to actually take action against those that are under you. And that course is a very difficult one sometimes to take, especially when you are new in a department. But I want to commit that we cannot continue to have a reputation that is bad as defense, and that something really needs to change. Because it's not only on this matter, there are a number of matters where we just seem to think that we are all, buddies, we know each other, we can cover each other, and things will just go away. It can't. So I make that commitment, Chairperson. By the end of this week, I will come back to you on when this board of inquiry is supposed to have finished and the report be discussed by you. But in the meantime, I want to say those 800 odd names that we speak about, the defense said we can look at this one, and this one we know they are reserve members. Let us make that list now available with comments along the sides of saying this one was disqualified because, this one qualified because, this one we know should have reported there but did not report. This one is a pure civilian, and therefore, in all honesty, we apologize to you and don't do it. And if we have to write these individuals letters of apology as the department, we should do so. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. Well said. We can't take it any further. We want to leave it at that for now, until such time you come back to us. Firstly, before the end of this week, indicating when the process is likely to conclude. When the process is likely to conclude, so that we can then schedule our meeting around that time to receive the report. And then two, that in the meantime, we'll get comments on the list that we have submitted to you. Obviously, it will be work in progress, like I said, because the final determination may come back to with a final position on each case, as it were. So we want to leave it at that for now, so that we can then move to another item. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your engagement. I think we've taken. I thought this matter was going to be a 30-minute matter, but I can see now it's taken us more than 1.5 hours, one and a half hours. But load shedding came in between. All right, so we want to leave it at that. Thank you very much. Can we quickly, thank you very much, Major General Ramazana. Let's move to the next item, which I said was the what did I say, Brian, was the next item?
The cyber warfare strategy.
The cyber warfare strategy. Right. Let me just call for the presentation from the team. Just a brief background to it, colleagues, before I call for the team. My notes. With Minister, we have been following, tracking this matter. I think it was in 2018-2019 financial year. It was reported that the strategy, the cyber warfare strategy, was within the departmental approval process. This strategy, the development of the strategy started in, as well, in 2015-2016 financial year. That's when it was reported as a target to be met for the first time. 2015-2016, 2016-2017, nothing, 2018 and 2019, again, the matter was still yet to be finalized. And it has since, I think the department has did not report on it in the last financial year, if I'm not mistaken. But one can assume that the strategy has been finalized now. But the team will report. I just want to give a brief background why we are calling for this report, because the matter remains outstanding for a very long time. And so the national National Development Plan does talk to issues of cyber security and cyber crimes, and but the NDP doesn't highlight any particular role for the DoD with regards to cyber security. And but of course, it has a role in cyber crimes, and the National Cyber Security Policy Framework. I'm looking at it now. It highlights different roles and responsibilities of the state, the organs of state, as well as civil society. But primarily for the Department of Defense and Military Veterans, it says it has overall responsibility for coordination, accountability, and implementation of cyber warfare, cyber defense measures in the Republic as an integral part of its national defense mandate. But on the implementation plan itself, because the issue is the implementation plan, assuming the strategy has been approved, is that the last time the department reported that the plan was yet to be finalized, because the department was still waiting for the broader cyber strategy to be finalized. And that the Cyber Command Center will be operational as soon as the issue of budget constraints was dealt with within the department. We thought we can't delay taking discussion on the matter, given that already various institutions in our country, including some of the major banks, have been hit, so it really calls for higher, levels of security approaches, as it were, because the world now is shifting from being physical to the cyber space. So as the National Defense Force, we can't be found wanting. I know some information may be sensitive. We don't want you to talk to the sensitive information, but just to assure that the matter is receiving attention. Thank you very much. Sebdev, do you want to make a remark before the presentation?
Chairperson, I think that you have summarized the matter as you clearly stated that our national cyber policy forum actually assigns roles to different departments that in terms of the roles that they have to play. And amongst those ones is the one that talks to the implementation, is the one that talks about the role of the Department of Defense. So the presentation that is going to be made to the portfolio committee members is giving the progress on the implementation of that cyber defense strategy. And the team that is here to deal with that will be Brigadier General Mbogozi and also Major Kakane that are going to do the presentation to the meeting. I hand over to the chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. President. The chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Defense, Mr. President, our Minister of Defense, Mr. President, Deputy Minister of Defense, Mr. President, members of the Portfolio Committee, General President, ladies and gentlemen, and Brigadier General Mapi Mbogozi, Director Cyber Command. Myself, there is stated, I'm going to present the progress on the implementation of the cyber defense strategy. My introduction will be as follows. The fifth domain of warfare, cyber, which consists of the boundless sphere of technology and artificial intelligence, electromagnetic spectrum is rapidly developing. The prosperity and security of our nation is significantly enhanced by our use of cyberspace. Same development has led to increased vulnerability and critical dependence on cyberspace. The threat in cyberspace have different origins, which includes, among other things, the cyber, the state actors and non-state actors, criminals as well as political, economically motivated individuals or organizations. It is imperative to consider a priority, the vital element of developing the homegrown technologies and secure means of utilizing the Internet of Things when it comes to the fourth industrial revolution. Cyber defense strategy propagates that cyber security is not a pure computer security matter. Instead, it views cyber security as a national policy matter, since it is the use of cyberspace which could have diverse implications on the country's economy and the national delivery of critical services. The cabinet approved the National Cyber Security Policy Framework on the 7th March 2012, and this was gazetted on the 4th December 2015. It states the following on the NCPF. Paragraph 13.1, in order to protect the interest in the event of cyber war, the cyber defense capability has to be built. The NCPF does promote that a cyber defense strategy that is informed by the national security strategy of South Africa is developed.
Chairperson, my apologies, but there's a huge background noise coming from somewhere. I'm not quite sure from where.
Already,
now it's quiet.
Yeah, it's quiet. Okay, over to you. Please don't unmute. I can see your name, yeah? As unmuted again, I will mention his name. Owen, it's Owen Apollis or something. Please mute. Over to General.
identified the JCPF Cyber Security Response Committee. Paragraph 16.5 states the following. The Department of Defense and Military Veterans has overall responsibility for coordination, accountability, and implementation of the cyber defense measures in the Republic of South Africa as an integral part of its national defense mandate. To this end, the department will develop policies and strategies pursuant to its core mandate. Due to the intensity of the cyber presence, the DOD was mandated by the National Cyber Security Policy Framework to build a unified cyber command aimed at protecting the national critical information infrastructure. Therefore, the Defense Intelligence was tasked to do the following. To create and staff a cyber command, and then the DI must pursue partners to obtain training, benchmarking standards, and technology transfer so as to capacitate the cyber command. And then the last one must that the DI must develop a cyber defense strategy. The aim of my presentation is to present the progress report, the progress on the implementation of the cyber defense strategy to the portfolio committee on defense and military veterans. My scope will deal with the following. In my scope, I'm going to deal with the cyber command main function, strategy, goals, objectives, and challenges, and then conclude. In this scope, what we are going to report, we are going to report the progress which has been made so far in regarding to the implementation of the cyber command strategy. So far, I will turn to my manager to continue with the presentation.
Good morning, Minister of Defence Force, Secretary of Defence, Chairperson, members of the committee on protocol observed. My name is Major Sikakane and I'm just going to carry on with the presentation. Before I start presenting the cyber command main function, it's important to understand that cyber, when it comes to a defense force, as a war-fighting entity and a defense intelligence whose end product is delivering intelligence, it's a big unit. Why we say it's a big unit? We don't only focus on computers or digital communication, which simply means communication between two computer nodes, but our battle space is a whole electromagnetic spectrum, including electronic warfare, SIGINT, you name it, long as it's analog or digital and it has to do with the technology, that's what we do. So cyber command main function, as in the cyber strategy. A cyber command is currently able to perform the following function. We are able to do threat analysis. Under threat analysis is detection and identification of cyber threats on the electromagnetic spectrum, not only digital space. Development of threat taxonomy in order to be able to predict possible threats. What we do here is we develop our own databases on doctrines, on the threat actors and how they act and be able to predict how they will possibly act. Monitoring of adversary threat tools, techniques and procedures. This is actually the study of their techniques, reverse engineering of their tools and techniques to save time and also to be able to defend and also act offensively when needed. Supply chain emerging threats. This is the ability to vet whatever the state is buying, to check for backdoors, both in the application layer, hardware layer, and also in the human layer. Cyber command main function 2, protection of national key information infrastructure, threat intelligence monitoring, and the whole SA cyberspace monitoring. Here we're talking about the whole electromagnetic spectrum, the whole IP range of South Africa and also Africa, which is the whole of Africa. Response to cyber attacks, which we have taken due to manpower and funding. Our stance to respond to cyber attacks is to stop them before they happen. So our response, which is then in graph with the protection of with tech intelligence and monitoring under protection of national key infrastructure is proactive. So we predict, we hunt for threats, and we stop the threats. Disaster recovery and remedial action. This is done by the system owner, whoever is the system owner. What we do, we confirm the security flaws and evaluate if it's feasible. The disaster recovery plan is feasible, will it work, or will it introduce more force? Cyber command strategy goals. The cyber defense strategy is anchored on the following goals. Goal 1, cyber defense capability development. Goal 2, cyber security awareness, research and training. Goal 3, national and international collaboration. The progress is as follows. Strategic goal 1, workforce establishment and retention. Defense intelligence was able to second members in the establishment of cyber command. Objective 2, develop operational capability. The cyber command has implemented the following. We have conducted a skill audit to determine the qualification of our members in the DoD. We did in-force training and also conducted other exercises in order to identify gaps. And suitable training was identified to address the gaps and priorities. Members were also enrolled in identified courses which enabled them to execute the task of cyber operator. If I may add, it's not a single course. There is no single cyber operators course that meets the standards of the requirements of the tasking of the DoD. So what we did is we found multiple courses which aim in developing the skill set, which is basically going to be developed to a proficiency, which takes around 24 months. Objective 3, the development of cyber command infrastructure. Development of a dynamic evolving cyber command infrastructure has been done, but what we mean by dynamic is not static, it means it changes every month. The check of last month and this month is different. So when we develop an infrastructure, it's not the same as it was when time passes. Cyber command has not yet acquired suitable facilities due to funding. This has to do with operational security. Current cyber command is accommodated in the Defense Intelligence Headquarters with limited space. Cyber command is able to function, however, not optimally. Cyber command is established in steps, namely the Threat Intelligence Center. It's able to do all the monitoring and identification and checking of threats. R&D, research and development and training lab. This is where we develop new techniques and operational. Strategic goal 2, objective 1, securitize the DoD environment. We constantly monitor external and internal threats that happen on a daily basis. Objective 2, digitize the military, not yet achieved due to manpower and funding. Objective 3, weaponize the DoD, not yet achieved due to manpower. Objective 4, develop research and development innovation capacity, which is very difficult to do because cyber command must engage relevant stakeholders with a proven track record in the cyber sphere. There are a lot of technological stakeholders out there, but they don't have a cooking clue when it comes to having a track record in the sphere. Strategy goal 3. Objective 1, monitoring incident response and information sharing. Cyber Command through Cyber Response Committee is working together with other government entities when it comes to incident response and information sharing. Objective 2, defense digital diplomacy. Cyber Command is part of the Cyber Defense Intelligence Cyber Security Subcommittee. Participation in the curriculum development in Lusaka, the full curriculum, the 24-month curriculum, which was led by Cyber Command. The following are the challenges the Cyber Command faced. infrastructure. Cyber Command needs a conducive infrastructure that will communicate a fully-fledged Cyber Command capability. This means a standalone capability that's not housed, doesn't house with any other entity. Funding. The funding is with regard to equipment, training, and personnel. Equipment. Procurement and maintenance of cyber equipment needs adequate funding, as most of the equipment, including software and hardware, is available abroad and is depending on a dollar-rand exchange. This also goes for R&D equipment, the tool sets, the spares. You don't find all of them in the country, you find them abroad. Training. Cyber specialized training is very expensive and it's a niche environment, and when you find the people, it's not normal institutions, and funding it is becoming a challenge. Personnel. This is about retention of the personnel. Implementation of the military dispensation for cyber members. And lastly, the approval of the cyber defense strategy and structure. Conclusion. Cyber Command is currently partially operational since it's not yet fully capacitated. Funding is needed for Cyber Command speed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to add, the recent Cyber Command has moved from CSIR to the Defense Intelligence Headquarters. And at the present moment, we moved there in April. This has an impact on the implementation of some of the things which the Cyber Command we wanted to do. But I can say that there has been a progress, because since we moved to the Defense Intelligence Headquarters, we were able to set up the cleanup, and my colleagues have elaborated. And then I can say that although we are not fully capacitated, but we can operate as a Cyber Command. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, that concludes this presentation. We are open to questions and remarks.
I'm not quite sure. I don't hear or see the chairperson.
Mr. Murray?
Yes, sir.
He's been kicked out and he's just joining us again now.
Okay, so we'll just wait for him, that he can just lead it. Thank you. Thank you, Peter.
I'm not sure, Brian, you suggest we wait for him or must we continue?
Mr. Mutler, Brian has also been picked up.
Mr. Mutler, why don't you take us forward that we can at least start to interact with the department? Brian is back.
Yeah, he's back now.
Yeah, maybe colleagues, let's just continue. I'll just step in for the chair, and he will continue when he is back in the meeting. We received the presentation, colleagues. They are done presenting. It's now an opportunity for members to interact with the presentation.
My hand has been raised, Mr. Mutley.
Okay. Honorable Murray, you may take the platform.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation. This was long awaiting, but there's an enormous lot of shortcomings and concerns that I've picked up from the presentation. And I think that is long overdue, that this must receive a much, much higher priority in the way that we see the Department of Defense going forward and protecting our integrity and complying with the Constitution. Just to raise a number of issues, I am glad it was mentioned that this is not only about so-called anti-hacking threats by others. So in other words, threats to our computer systems, threats to our information systems. Yes, that's part of it. But it's only a portion of it. In terms of the current and future way that the Defense Force should be operating is how to use cyber capabilities for protection and especially in our case for monitoring, reconnaissance and reporting so that we can use a rapid response team to go and investigate where there are possible transgressions. We know, for instance, at our land border and maritime border situation, we know very little in terms of what is going on, because it's just humanly impossible for people patrolling the land borders to know everything and to pick up everything, and most certainly on the maritime arena as well. So that is, in my humble opinion, where we should focus and reprioritize how to use cyber capabilities for defense purposes. And yes, the way that you go and get intelligence and collect intelligence and how to use that to position yourself, that is very, very important. I think that should require a lot more attention and hopefully priority from the minister, from the SecDef, from the chief of the SNDF, and hopefully they have made it clear that National Treasury must accept the fact that cyber capability doesn't come easy and doesn't come cheap necessarily. But in terms of my question is really to SecDef and to the minister on reprioritization. Minister has said a couple of times, we cannot go on the same way we have done for so very long. We have to do it differently. This is one of the things that we have to do differently. This is a force multiplier that can assist the Defense Force tremendously to have a much more efficient use of our equipment and capabilities. I just wanted to raise one or two issues. Where it says that we have not achieved objective two of our strategic objectives, you know, how and when will that be addressed? For me, it is quite important that we need to address those important issues. Objective two and objective three. Nothing has been done. I know that money is a problem, but how are we progressing in terms of planning and determining what we are needing? And then especially, have we started to talk with other nations in terms of cooperation? You know, when it is about cyber technology for reconnaissance and monitoring and reporting, you know, we can work together. And you can sign in or sign out in terms of certain functions and information that you require. It is also in other, we know that other nations are already have got satellites, you know, around South Africa and above South Africa. So they know already of much of this information. Is to what extent are we accessing and tapping into that information? So my question is that partly, to what extent have we started to talk and discuss with other nations in SADC, but also those many, many countries that have got defense attachés in South Africa and diplomatic missions in South Africa, because they have got the access and they have got the capabilities that we need, that we know that we cannot afford. So those cooperations is important for me, and to what extent have they started to develop a strategy and implementation plans in terms of border and maritime reconnaissance, monitoring, and then to rapid response. I also would very much like to know, and I know this is sensitive, and you know we must arrange something to determine what is the kind of cyber command that we need, strategy that we need, infrastructure that we need, and how much will this cost? Because only if we know that, then we know when we sit with priorities that we must decide on which to lead out and which to concentrate on, then we know the full picture. And I would very much like to know when that will be done and whether we can get that. And especially National Treasury and Cabinet is very important because we must get them behind us. So that is where the Minister will come in and set them. But thank you very much so far. We just need to move much, much faster on this one. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other question or from colleagues?
Yes. Can I say something, Honourable Mutle? Thank you very much.
Oh, you are back, Chair. Yes.
Yes. Thank you very much, Honourable Mutle. I will take over after this comment.
Okay.
The last time we had a briefing from the Department of Defense on this cyber warfare strategy was in 2019. Let me just confirm the date. No, it was in March. March 2020. The presenter, the department said they needed about 800 million rand. That was the 2018 estimate over a 3-year period to get the required capability, cyber defense capability. But today we are still receiving the information that the defense capability is there, but not fully operational due to funding challenges, and that equipment needed to, you know, for the capability is not adequate, and so on. In other words, we are still on strategic goal, objective number one. Which is the implementation, what you call the development of cyber defense capability. I want to take a concrete view on the matter. That a report that says cyber command is not functioning optimally. It's how many years later? 2 years later. It suggests to me that little has been done since the last time. Maybe a direct question to the presenters is how much is set aside for this function. Last time, the estimate was 800 million rand over 3 years, and has the funding to this entity or to this capability improved since the last time we spoke about it? And maybe let's look at that for now, so that we get an understanding as to whether this capability will ever be fully implemented within the Department of Defense. I just want to leave it at that for now. Thank you very much. Over to you. Let me just check if there are any hands. It doesn't look like there's any more hands.
Maybe, Chair,
yes.
Before you let me also take this opportunity and raise my question. From the presentation that Mr. that we had with them, as you indicated to us in 2019, they indicated to us, demonstrated their capabilities in terms of tier, from tier 1, so forth and so on. They know better. I don't want to disturb it, but in terms of their tiers capabilities, how far have they moved since that time to ensure that their capabilities improves to meet or to match the international standards? And to what an extent are they also selling their services to the private sector? Because my understanding is that the private sector might also be vulnerable in terms of cyber crime. But once they have developed themselves in terms of those capabilities, they should be able to extend their services to the private sector for them to generate income, because we can't be always crying foul about the budget constraints that we all know, whilst we can use these capabilities to also generate some income and use that income to develop further, so that we are at the tier that is will be internationally competitive to defend the country and counter any cyber crime that it might be perpetuated against our country. Maybe lastly, in terms of your research and development, how far are you in terms of investing into your research and development to keep your cyber capabilities up to date? Thank you very much, Chair. You may take over.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mutle. Over to you, General Mkhokozi.
Chairperson, my colleagues will assist me on the answering of some of the questions. Let me say thank you for the comment from the Honorable Marek. And I want to say that as government, as we have stated that we are part and parcel of the SADC Self-Defense Committee on Cyber Security, is where we engage each other with the SADC countries so that we can see how can we cooperate with each other and how can we develop, and also to see in the SADC region whether if they have something which we don't have, we can share even the information with them. At the present moment, I can say yes, there is an engagement with the SADC committee and even with some of the defense attaché around here in South Africa when it comes to the cyber defense matter. And then on the issue of the structure and the manual, the implementation, I can say that it's true that implement, I'm talking about this 800 million, it's true that the implementation plan was presented with those figures at the present moment of more than 800 million 2 years ago. 2 years in 2019, I can say that yes, at the present moment we have not yet get all that money, but because we understand that defense force every year the budget is being cut, but with the difficulty which we have as the defense as the cyber command, we are able to to operate at the present moment. And another thing which I wanted to say, I think Mr. Marek, most of the honorable Mr. Marais, all the things you have just a comment, and we are taking note of the thing which you have stated that our impression when it comes to the borderline and maritime border monitoring, that we look at that so that we can be able to see where can we chip in so that we can be able to see that the cyber command contribute to the security of our country. I will hand over to my colleague just to answer other questions.
Minister Kale, when it comes to the issue of objectives 2 and 3 not being done and what is done, and maritime and border monitoring and also battlefield air aiding our forces when it comes to cyber, all of that has been planned, all of that has been costed, it's just an issue of funding. And when we talk about manpower, to find a person suitable to work in the cyber environment, it's also very difficult to find a person. You can have 100 people that you be an interview and you will find no one. Because the person must be a dynamic person, the person must be a person who is out of the box. It must be a person who's able to figure out things that other people don't usually think about. So when it comes to the objectives not yet done, the planning has been done for the last 4 to 5 years, and it keeps being updated, improved, and costed, and hence the 800 million figure. The figure doesn't talk only on training, it talks also borderline, maritime, everything that was mentioned. When it comes to the level of tiers, first of all, the tiers involve the following. Defensive capabilities and personnel, offensive capabilities and personnel, and also collective capabilities and personnel. But now to get to tier 1, it also goes back to funding, because tier 1 is all about campaigns. If you look at a classic example of Apple or Huawei, which is a campaign, that is a tier 1 campaign, whereby you create your own product, you create your own infrastructure, you create your own software commercially, and then from there you use it as a collection tool or a war fighting propaganda tool or whatever. So to get to tier 1, you can have the personnel, you can have the plans in place, but the funding becomes an issue. And it's not about equipment when it comes to funding. It's about the campaign. Because if you use a laptop for a single campaign, you must get rid of the laptop. I'm just using it for example, and do a new one. It doesn't matter. If you are using it for a day for a single campaign, that laptop must never be used again. It can be disposed elsewhere, because now it comes back to an offset issue. The main issue here is funding campaign and funding and development of personnel. So planning, when it comes to planning of all the questions that we ask, the levels, the tiers, members have been trained, bootstrap 45 members who are very capable, currently operating fully at a tier 2, which we call red team and blue team. These members are able to respond to any threat. These members are able to engage any target if need be. But the issue always boils down to campaign costs. I thank you.
Chairperson, if I may come in, I just wanted to respond to some of the questions about the digitization of the system. I think if we step back and look at the mandate of defense, it is to protect and defend. So it means not only do we protect from a defense point of view, but it is defending the state itself and its economy. And the power of cyber security is that it has that capacity of bringing down even economies of the country if they are not properly used. But also we need to look at it from a business continuity point of view. Because even if you are hacked and you are not able to recover, then you are not able to carry out your work. So
whatever we do from defense side, yes, it is the role that has been assigned to DOD by the National Cyber Policy Framework, because all the departments, and we look at this matter as well from a JCPS point of view. It is also very important that we invest a lot around the issues of skills development, because also if we have the hardware and we have people that are not properly trained, it becomes very difficult to manage that hardware. I know that we talk about the funding being an issue. When we were looking at this matter as well from a JCPS point of view, we came to a conclusion that this is one project that needs to be run nationally, in the sense that you can't have one department pulling this way and doing this thing and the other one to the other side. Because what it would mean is that each and every department will then buy its own hardware in terms of dealing with that, and they can be sourcing that from different role players. So it was then decided at the time that the Minister of Justice of the cluster at the time went to Cabinet, and Cabinet announced that they will fund money. We needed to consolidate what would be needed by each of the major role players, and then acquire the hardware that will then feed into everybody, and everybody knows what their role is going to be. I do agree, I think, with the sentiment that we need to also focus a lot on development of research and also to be innovative. You cannot be in a cyber space and not want to go bespoke, because if you go bespoke, it's your own, you develop and then you keep on improving on it. And I think, Chairperson, right now, there is nobody who does not have email. And email was started by the American Defense Force, and they tried it and only released that after 10 years to say this is what we have. So it means that when we have the right to stop it, we can be able to deal with that. Because then innovation becomes very critical, and then also building our own skills. And then we are able then to say that we innovate, and therefore we can then be able to take that and also see in future where it takes us, because it does provide that ability of generating income. But even if you were to do that, you have to be comfortable with the products that you set up yourself. So I thought that it is important to do so, because even when we digitize, it must be an integrated system that we are able to replicate, so that even in the instance that something happens, nobody will even know that something has gone wrong, because then your disaster recovery mechanism comes into play quickly. And that's where we talk about business continuity. So I think that this is something that we need to continue looking at very closely and then see how we deal with this. But I just thought I needed to also bring the perspective that it is something that is actually looked into by the entire security cluster, with roles defined for each of the members of the security cluster. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Effective. I think we can wrap up now on the understanding that for the capability to be fully operational, it requires a financial injection, and so we want to appeal again to you, Effective, and the team, to really consider the issue of funding to this objective favorably, because like you have just indicated, the importance of the institution in the whole step up So we can't afford to have it remain at the state that it is. There has been some attempt to bring it up to functionality, but it is not at a state where we can say it is fully developed and we as a country can rely on it. We're not yet there. And let's look at finding funds to support it. You can't operate with such an important strategic capability without the necessary equipment, without the necessary R&D financial injection, without the necessary expertise. And you have it, but it would not be what ideally the country is as strategic as ours in there when you consider our role on the continent will be at the level at which we are now. So I want to leave it at that and for now and thank the presenters tonight, but we should thank you for what we have achieved since the last time. I think there's been some movement, but I can't say the movement has reached the level where we can be satisfied as the entity. Maybe the last minute comment on this would be from the minister before we close and move to the next item. If the minister wants to make a comment.
Chair, I don't really have to make any comment. I think you covered most of my points. I think that some of the points I had wanted to make have been touched on. We live in a region and therefore there is no way we can continue thinking that we will secure ourselves and be active in the cyberspace without one networking with the countries in the region. So what the point I'm making is that you do need some coordination, but at the same time, you do need to have something in your back pocket. You do need what you have just referred to, the R&D. That injection is necessary, but not just internally within the department. You also need to be coordinating with the institutions of higher learning. Our unfortunate thing is that the two main countries that are giants are squeezing us in between. You've got America on the one side and China on the other side, and that will affect our agility. And the last point I want to make is that we as South Africa will develop our cyber strategy and activities within the ambit of the AU. We're duty bound to do that because that is what and that is who we are. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Minister. We'll then leave it at that for now. Thanks for the presentation. We now have two presentations remaining. The first presentation is on the implementation of the exit mechanism. I don't know who is going to take us through that presentation. And it's about nine slides. May I request that we focus on the slides that talks to the current strengths and the strengths that would bring you within your allocation and what it will take you to get to the strengths in terms of the exit mechanism. If you don't spend this money, 1 billion rand was allocated to us, and if we don't spend it, chances are we may not get the 800 million rand that is promised in the new financial year. So we've got to spend this money, and the results have got to be shown that the money was spent in a manner that enables us to save some money in order to remain within the allocation, as it were. Over to you, Chief HR or someone in the office. Thank you so much. So, Jeff, you want to say something before we start?
Jefferson, thank you very much. Yes, we'll focus on that, keep the progress report that has been made, and then also the measures that we are taking as a department to reduce our HR cost, which is the only area where we are overspending as the department. And as you correctly point out, Jefferson, the department has been given 1.8 billion rand, which means this financial year we had a billion rand to utilize for the liquidity exit mechanism, and then the other 800 million is for the following financial year. And that 800 million will be given to us, subject to us being able to deliver on this one. So, Chair, the 1 billion that has been received is a commitment from Treasury. Then we have also about 865 million that we have to find within the department, which then takes into account the benefits that will be paid to those members that will be exiting. So when you look at it, in as much as we've been given a million, the total amount is going to be 1.865 million, because the 865 million is what will be the liability of the department in that execution of the men. So I will hand over to General Mutabane, the Major General Mutabane, to introduce the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Sir Jeff. Chair, Minister of Defence and Military Weapons, on Honourable Business. Deputy Minister of Defence, Honourable Tabang Makweta, members of the Portfolio Committee on Defence. My name is Minister Mutabane, Deputy Chief Human Resources. I'm standing in for Admiral Kuhu due to other commitments was unable to do in this meeting. I am with Brigadier General Richard, who will be doing the presentation, and as requested by you, we'll just focus on the slides that you have asked us to focus on. And Chair, the fact that has given the background to the presentation, and I don't think it is necessary for me to once again give that background. On that note, Chair, I will then request General Richards to do the presentation. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, the Minister of Defence and Military Veterans, the Deputy Minister, Secretary for Defence, members of the Portfolio Committee, and officials of the Department of Defence, present. The tasking of the third term of the Portfolio Committee on Defence, in terms of just brief, was to provide an update in respect of the implementation of an exit mechanism and additional measures to reduce and reduce the cost pressures of the compensation of employees. The aim of the brief will cover the areas of the tasking and the scope the progress of implementation. The context of lies within the past and cabinet and government decision to appropriate below the current of the real year. The compensation of employees and the effect of it, as you glean from the screen, is from 20 up to 2021 irregular expenditure as occurred of 10.2. The existing allocation allocation for the 22 period, a further increase is foreseen due to the oscillating nature of appropriation forecast by government in respect of the compensation of employees. Would have an escalation and an increase into the future. On the Department of Defense in terms of security operations aligned to the constitutional mandate. Consequent and subsequent to the regular expenditure of the compensation of employees, the department made an application for national treasury, as indicated in bullet number 3, has elected to keep such government in their place until such time as significant progress is implemented with regards to the HR interventions as contemplated. Right. Mr. Chairperson, honourable members, Minister of Defence. The portfolio committee, together with the National Treasury representatives and the Department of Defense, has decided on the course of actions to implement HR, the underfunding of the compensation of employees have resulted in. Consequently, it is direct the thought to reach equilibrium between what the Department of Defense HR budget requires and the appropriate compensation of employees. And listed in bullet number 3 are the main interventions that was concurred to for implementation by the department, which is an average plan for an average strength of 73,000 over the FTE, recruitment and skills development system index every alternate calendar year, reduce the reserve force mandates to 1.9 million mandates, cap increases of regimental, operational, and allowances paid in lieu of schedules, as well as to reactivate the implementation of exit strategies, namely the mobility exit mechanism for soldiers and employee-initiated severance package for civilian personnel of the department. Most notably, the department remains committed to implement these cost-saving measures. And during the course of this deliberation, we'll report on the progress made thus far. As well as the department remains engaged with National Treasury and other stakeholders to find solutions to implement and find a solution to the current impasse of underfunding the compensation of employees. That being said, current correspondence between Ministers of Finance and Minister of Defence and Military Veterans has been issued and has been released. As with any plan, and given the course of action that we together decided upon between the Department of Defence, the Portfolio Committee on Defence and Military Veterans, as well as National Treasury, the plan, as foreseen, would implement strict reductions and curtail, especially the reserve force utilization of the SA, South African National Defence Force. And it was foreseen that it would have a significant impact if the reserve force mandates are reduced from 2.6 million mandates annually to 1.9 million mandates, as is the case of this finance. And most notable is the inability that we found in the first quarter of the financial year in respect of reserve force utilization, being that the South African National Defence Force is unable to meet the planned reductions from 2.6 million mandates to 1.9 million mandates. And it's largely as a result of the current military operations tempo, the requirement to meet administrative obligations for compliance, and more specifically, to secure our military installations with the utilization of increased and a reserve force guards, which is an operational security matter. Inclusive of the challenges that we as a department face in implementing the HR interventions are the forecast administrative delays for implementing the exit strategies, namely the employee-initiated severance package as well as the mobility exit mechanism for soldiers. And together, the Department of Defense, the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans and National Treasury has foreseen that the separation of soldiers by way of specifically the severance package will not necessarily translate in the first quarter as a result. And the department will continue in the endeavor to run a second and third rounds of election identification of potential members to separate by way of this exit mechanism to induce cost savings measure, but more specifically to result in a potential rejuvenation of the force. I would like to pause at this point of our presentation, denoting the service report that is provided to the Portfolio Committee on Defense as a condition set for implementing this course of action, as well as to confirm that such a report that has been submitted by the Secretary for Defense to National Treasury in line with the condition set for funding not only the exit mechanism but also the implement and monitor its implementation of these HR interventions. I draw your attention then to serial number 1A, which relates to the first intervention of maintaining an average strength of 73,000 for the MTES unit. And as you would see, the serial number 1A focuses on managing the approved cost structure of the Department of Defense, having implemented the deactivation of accumulatively 14,693 posts that have been vacant for a period of 5 years and longer as unfunded due to the lower rate of appropriating the compensation of employees. In terms of serial number 1B, as well as related to the maintaining the average strength of 73,000, our force strength have reduced by 1,568, being the comparison between the actual strength per month as well as the planned strength. And it is foreseen that the reduction in the force strength, as denoted in the red, will continue to grow as we reach March 2023, being the number of people that would separate from the Department of Defense, as well as our inability to appoint according to plan to fill vacancies that have become vacant in the course of previous financial years. In terms of serial number 2, the reduction of the reserve force mandates to 1.9 million mandates, the South African National Defense Force remain hard-pressed to meet the target of 1.9 million mandates for the financial year. And as discussed, it is placing significant pressure on the South African National Defense Force, more specifically, to continue to deliver on conducting successful military operations. And in that respect, accumulatively to the month of July, it has exceeded by 218,000 mandates, the originally planned mandates for the month of July. In terms of serial number 3, recruitment of military skills development intakes of alternate calendar years, according to the Chief SAMDA priorities for such intakes, we know that we are in compliance with firstly the plan of recruiting 1,997 originally and now on strength 1,985. But its distribution is what needs to be significantly noted, is that most of the MSDS intake is accounted for in the combat and combat support environments where to support our capacity to train for the deployment of soldiers in support of military operations. In terms of serum number 4, the department has successfully kept the increases of allowances, failing view of scarce skills, regimental and operational allowances, and that has a forecast saving of approximately 67 million rand, and that will continue over the course of the next 3 years as planned. And more now specifically to the task in to address the reactivation of exit strategies. We will focus first on the severance mechanism as applicable to civilian personnel of the DoD, noting that 145 applications were received at the 3rd of August, of which 10 applications were not approved or did not meet the criteria. 110 were approved by the Minister of Defence and Military Veterans. 7 is awaiting approval. 6 was forwarded to the DPSA for concurrence, and 3 applications is currently being processed. And as can be noted, in terms of the number of personnel and the number of personnel that they have separated in the month of April to July, cumulatively 22 EISP civilian personnel have separated to the value of 633,000 rand paid in terms of GMBF liabilities, and in terms of departmental benefit liabilities to the members, 2.8 million. And in terms of implementation of the mobility exit mechanism for soldiers, 433 offers have been approved by the Minister of Defence and Military Veterans, of which 207 is accounted for in the SA Army, 76 in the SA Air Force, 95 in the SA Navy, 43 in the SA Military Health Service, 10 in the Defence Intelligence Division, and 2 in Chaplain General's Division. The estimated cost liability in terms of the GEPF is 280 million rand, or translated as 26% of the 1 billion rand allocation potentially being spent as a result of these approvals. And in terms of the severance cost, 243 million rand, equating to 27% of the 668 million rand liability of the department. And just to pause at this moment, next slide, is that once the funding strategy of the exit mechanism for soldiers, the Portfolio Committee of Defense, the Military Veterans, should note that the Department of Defense have met all the conditions set by National Treasury to submit exit plans and exit strategies, costings, as well as to be able to report. And these plans were evaluated and reviewed by National Treasury, and the correspondence received from National Treasury on 30 March indicated that the 1 billion allocation for the implementation of the mobility exit mechanism must be exclusively utilized to pay or make good the GEPF liability. And it authorized the department to reprioritize internally to fund the departmental liability of 868 million rand, as indicated on the slide. However, the point must be made that these are additional reprioritization of the operating budget, which places the South African National Defence Force on the back foot, because our military capability continues to be eroded, and the reprioritization has proven itself ineffective and cannot be sustained over the course of this implementation. And so the efficacy of conducting successful military operations are systematically reduced, being that the department is reprioritizing from its operating budget to fund a liability that should otherwise be funded by National Treasury. And it places a huge strain on the department's operating budgets going forward into the implementation. implementation. That being said, the Department of Defense continues to monitor its implementation of all interventions on a monthly basis, and it reports on a quarterly basis to both National Treasury as well as to the Portfolio Committee on Defense. Thank you. In terms of our poll costs, in year and 2023 compensation of employees allocation and its impact on planning for the future, we note that in the year 2022, in terms of serial number one, the allocation was 30.6 billion rand. In the financial year 2023-24, it is 29.6 billion rand. 24-25 is 3.9 billion rand. And for the financial year 25-26, it's 32.3 billion rand. And here one can observe the oscillating nature of the appropriate forecast appropriation, as well as the intended reduction of the compensation of employees, which plays into the space of the increasing forecast irregular expenditure of the compensation of employees amounts to be increased in the future. So, in terms of the projected expenditure for the financial year 22-23, it is our budget requirement is 33.3 billion rand. For 23-24, it is 32.5 billion rand. And 24-25 is 32.4 billion rand. And 25-26, a forecast 32.4 billion rand. And this the budget requirement is focused on the back of National Treasury guidelines and the focus on collective agreements due to be signed only for this year, but it may also impact in the future. And so translating the budget requirements, the allocation, and the HR intervention impact, one notes that we continue to maintain a plan to maintain an average strength of 73,000, being for the year 2022-23 a force strength of 72,986, for 23-24 a force strength of 72,864, for 24-25 72,596, and 25-26 70,946. Well within the plan and approved plan of the Department of Defense together with the Portfolio Committee and National Treasury. However, when we focus what would be the actual strength in terms of our planning, given what we know in terms of the oscillating nature of the compensation of employees underfunding, as well as curtailing the number of personnel to be replacing our personnel losses, we see that we will continue a force strength reduction over the MTIF and outer years, resulting in a forecast force strength of 58,220 in the financial year 25-26. And that would place a strain on the HR requirement to support military capabilities in order that capabilities are successfully employed during military operations. We also draw the committee's attention to the forecast impact of these interventions, including the exit mechanism, drafting down the forecast deficit to approximately 35 million rand in the financial year 25-26. In terms of reserve force planning and budgeting for the consequent wages, we maintain a trajectory in our plan of 1.9 million rand, a million mandates for reserves. However, just based on the first quarter results of utilization, it is more likely that the department will be unable to reach these levels in regional force utilization. To conclude, the Department of Defense and the South African National Defense Force remain resolute to meet planned HR interventions as contemplated by the Ministerial Director. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation, and colleagues. The presentation is on the table for discussion. I recognize, but before I recognize Mr. Mare, I just need to place this on the record. between from the 1st of April 2020 to end of March 2021, you say in your annual report that you began April 2020 with 73,987 members, employees, and that the appointments and transfers into the department is 777, and the terminations and transfers out of the department was 2,565. Those were the numbers. But you still overspent your budget. So in other words, with 73,000 strength, you overspent your budget, I think, by close to 2 billion rand. Now, the question I have is, what is this number that will enable you to remain within the budget allocation? I see the projections that you are making, General, that for instance, this is what you're saying, that 2022-2023 and the factoring, the implementation of the exit strategy, are likely to remain with 71,000 for 2018. And that in the second year of the implementation of this exit mechanism, we are likely to have 71,472, and that in 2024-2025, around 69,000. Now, what is this magic figure that we are looking at? I understand your projection and all that, but they don't give me comfort that the figure that you are working around it will keep you within the budget allocation. Now, having said that, let me recognize Mr. Maran.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the presentation. I want to start off by saying thank you very much. I mean, this is not new information. It's also not something that is comforting us. And then I want to say, Chairperson, I fully agree with you, because we can go on with this overspending, and we know that so far National Treasury hasn't given us any additional funding, and it's probably unlikely that they will do. So we are just exacerbating our problem and challenges. So I would also like to know, you know, to keep within that approved budget, not the projected expenditure, the approved budget. How much will that be? Will that, the actual strength that we can afford, will that be 68,000 68,000 this year? Or will it be 65,000? Or will it be 69,000? So that we know how much in terms of actual strength we're actually sitting with let's say, over budget. Or in excess of the budget that we can afford. That is very important, because then we are talking about the realities and what we are facing. Because the next point is to go on and give us 2023 mandates for reserve force is still 1.98, and the next year the same and the same, while we know already that by July we have overspent by 213,000 mandates. Now, in terms of the first quarter, multiply that by four very easily, and then you see we are not going to end at the 2.7 million where the minister has cut down to 1.9. We will most probably reach 3 million mandate, million reserve force mandates. So in other words, we have to deal with the realities. And as long as we have got a situation where we do not get additional funding for non-budgeted deployments and projects, then this problem will continue. If we can get to a situation, Minister, that any deployment in the future and currently that is not planned for and that is not budgeted for and that we do not have the funds, if it is justified, like we had with Prosper, the President must allow and approve additional funding from National Treasury. Then we haven't got a problem. But as long as we proceed to deploy so easily without providing the resources, then we're going to have bigger and bigger problems. We know at this stage in Mozambique, the fact that, the soldiers have been deployed for a full year, 1,494 strength, is going to have a major impact on the reserve force and also on the cost of employees, because there are additional allowances that is driving that cost up. And we must factor that in. Otherwise, you know, we are fooling ourselves. And we will have this problem continuously and only blame it on, deployment and additional operations. And we know already about this, so we cannot just keep back and not addressing that. We have to do that, and we have to know that, and we have to bring that into account. I want to know, Minister, and I don't want to preempt what will happen in the medium-term expenditure framework announcement, but if we know that there will be additional funding allocated and provided for specifically projects like Bukela, then we know that we don't have to worry about that and complain about that. But as long as we've got figures like this, we have got major problems. Then I also want to ask about men. We know that the current year's budget is 1 billion rand for exit mechanism, and next year 800 million rand. Now, this year it seems like it's only 868 million that will be taken up. Why is this? What has the department picked up? Why do people not taking up the opportunity for MEM? And then secondly, do we already know how much people will take the MEM opportunity in the next financial year? Because I think there's already people that has indicated they want to take MEM, but they want to exit only in the next financial year. Because that will also help us in terms of planning. And then, let's see. Yeah, that's basically what I've got at this stage. Thank you very much. If there's anything else, I can always come in again. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Mutle.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. One question from me. And I think Honorable Murray also touched on it, is with regard to challenges as articulated in, on the, I think it's slide 5, which emanates from increased HRA capacity requirement to support the military operation, which as a result of that, there will be an irregular expenditure as a result of this requirement. I just want to find out, what is it that they have done to ensure that, because these are requirements and my understanding is that they can't say no, they need to ensure that they implement these requirements as part of their mandate. But to what extent are they engaging National Treasury to ensure that there is condonement in this regard? So that by the time the AG comes, it will not be an issue. because it's reasonable that they are executing a particular responsibility, but it can continue to be judged as irregular even whilst they are under pressure to perform certain responsibilities as they are provisioned within the Constitution and the Defence Act. What is it that they are doing? I will be gladly waiting to hear what is it that the department is doing to avoid this irregularity.
Thanks, Thabo. Can I add question to the list of questions that are on the table already? You report that they had planned to utilize the reserve force to the tune of 1.959 man days. That was the plan, but you've exceeded that number. You ended up, you exceeded that number by 238 man days due to the unrest in July due to the unrest. So that's the number by which you have exceeded your planned target. My question: why is that an issue when there is a separate allocation for it? Is money that is made available to the department over and above what was already budgeted for? Assuming that the budget that you had at the beginning of the financial year was to cover the planned main days. But due to the challenges we experienced, we had to exceed that number by that much, 218,000, as you are mentioning it. But there was funding for it. Just explain to us so that we understand why you still consider that as a problem. I'm raising this point because even in the future, even when you plan to have lesser numbers, I think for the future, I don't know what numbers you set aside for next year, for example, and you exceed that number by X number of fragment days, there will be an allocation given to the department over and above the allocation within which you do your planning. Where is the gap? Maybe we should zoom in into the gap. The gap is underfunding of the this additional responsibility. If it is underfunding, it's underfunding by how much? So that we have not gotten a response that says this is what was budgeted for, this is an extra funding, and this is the balance at the end of the day. Is it negative or positive? Because if it is positive, it's a plus to the department because that money can then subsidize other things. If it is negative, obviously it's money that has got to be subsidized from other programs, you know, or funded from other programs. So that as we attend to the next letter of deployment, of employment of soldiers, we also look at whether it comes with adequate funding for that particular mission before we come here and be told that, man, look, this has actually interfered with our planned numbers as well as the budget that was made available for the purpose. And I now hand over to you, Sector. I don't hear them. Are they speaking?
No, certainly not on my side.
We keep on losing you from this side, so it's difficult to follow.
But colleagues, were you also losing me? I just want to check if the problem.
No, sir, definitely not. I was following you the whole time.
Oh, I see. I think the problem is on your side, Sector, but you may come in. But the issue is reconciliation. After a deployment, you were planned to utilize so many mandates, but due to the unforeseen employment of soldiers, you ended up with this number. Okay, in other words, you exceeded the planned deployment by this the planned numbers or strength by this number. The allocation was this much, and this is the deficit or surplus. Thank you so much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to respond to the question where we're required to indicate as to why are people not interested in replacing them. As you all know, that this is a surveillance package that is initiated. And I want to believe that the uncertainty in terms of the current economic situation is one of the most contributing factors, because employees are not even sure that the package, the severance package that they're going to get from the department will make them survive throughout their lives after they've exited. What we have then done is we have embarked on conducting information briefs together with GDF, where the employees are provided with full package information that will then assist them in making those decisions. I want to assure the portfolio committee on this that there is movement in that regard, because we are now having another second round where we're going to consider quite a number of applications or identifications that have been accepted by our union. I will then ask General Richard to respond to other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, General. Thank you, Detective. Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Defense, in summary, those who have reached our main comments and asked questions, there are four questions that I think we have deduced from the discussion. The first will be, what is the strength that would meet the allocation within compensation? And I would refer the honourable members to the slide relating to the four-part MTSF, India MTSF projections for our plan strength. It is slide number 8 of the information pack. It's not an impossible question to answer, but a full strength that now needs to be understood within the context of the evolving threat to the sovereignty of South Africa. And in saying that, to answer the question directly, it cannot even be answered, because when you look at serial number 1 of the allocation forecast for the financial year 22-23 up to financial year 25-26, the allocation oscillates or varies between the financial year, and therefore the force strength of each financial year would be different. So if the answer to the question only can be if the allocation is stagnant or remain constant. That's the first point. And if it is constant, given what we are allocated for this financial year, the number that this financial year can fund is 66,000 employees and soldiers, not 73,000. And the variance between the current strength and the strength that it funds accounts for the deficit that we have in the compensation of employee allocation. The strength is defined by the security, evolving security scenario of South Africa that requires the South African National Defence Force to conduct successful military operations. Given that, it also needs to take account of unplanned and unforeseen tasking that was not part of initial planning, nor was it part of the allocation as appropriated by government. And Mr. Baba is quite correct in his deliberation on what is the gap where these situations play itself. The gap is the answer to that, sir, and portfolio committee members, is that we have not been reimbursed by National Treasury for the unplanned and unforeseen expenditure that we are incurring. And inclusive of that is the forecast utilization of reserve forces beyond the planned number of reserve forces. You are quite right to say, to make the deduction that the reserve force mandates have been planned and it was funded. And even on the serial number 3, you can see the planning and the funding of this financial year as going forward. So the gap is, and you might ask, what would be the financial gap determined by the department? It is not as easy to forecast as Honorable Maria has indicated. You take the 218,000 mandates more than what is planned, multiplied by 4. The reserve force utilization would be reduced if the operation is ended, as is the case with the projected termination of Operation Chariot. But it will continue for operations, other operations planned or unplanned, or even exercises that we conduct in terms of preparing our forces. And in this respect, the department has made a determination for the cost implication projected for the financial year for the number of mandates exceeding the planned mandates and the budgeted mandates for reserve forces. And that is 480 million rand for the forecast for the financial year. So the department is on top of the gap between what is allocated and funded and what is it expected to execute in terms of its planning going forward. The third question that I would like to respond to is to indicate that in terms of the unplanned, unfunded operations currently not funded, but the expenditure is going forward, is accounts to almost 500 million rand. And this 500 million rand, you must put it on top of the forecast expenditure of the deficit that we are initiating as a concern. And we must appreciate with due respect to the Minister of Defence, the portfolio committee's intent to resolve the impasse of the compensation of employees' deficit. And that should be taken forward as a support that the report needs. I think to indicate or to reflect on what is the plan for next year in terms of the MEM funding. As indicated during the presentation, Honorable Chairperson, the department has submitted to National Treasury an exit strategy for mobility exit mechanism in terms of the 1 billion as well as the conditional grant of 800 million for next financial year. And the number forecast for next financial year is 650 soldiers to be identified in that form. But as the honourable members are aware, it is a conditional grant on our performance of this financial year. And we will receive the allocation in terms of next year's implementation round of the mobility exit mechanism. The last one is relating to the condonement. In deliberations with National Treasury of the staff, it is expected that on the back of the performance of implementing the HR interventions, as you have now received the status report, at the conclusion of the third quarter, the department is contemplating to submit an application for condonement for the irregular expenditure dated from 2017-18 to this month, forecast financial year 2022-23, and it's estimated around 12.9 billion rand of application. And we are looking forward to that, because in the last staff engagement of 4 October 2021, the department was given that assurance that the current application, whilst in abeyance and subject to our performance against planned implementation of intervention, the National Treasury would favorably consider such an application during this financial year for the past period. And I'm hoping that they would not turn around on that one. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Just before I let you off on this one, General, I have two follow-up questions to make. One, it's on the reconciliation. After the fund, the what you call the unfunded or underfunded tasking. Is it possible to share that information with the portfolio committee to say for the employment of soldiers on this date, so much was allocated in terms of the employment letter, but this is the actual expenditure in relation to that deployment, and for employment of soldiers, why this was the allocation in the employment letter and this was the actual expenditure, so that we keep track on the extent to which the department is underfunded in all these activities that are extra to what is already in the budget. Is it possible to get that information? You may not go far. You may take 2 years, the last financial year, that's 2021, and 2021-22. These last two financial years. Just to give us a sense, a breakdown of the extent to which you had to account for the deficit as a result of this employment that were not planned, as it were. That's one. And two, you report here that you are still in the process of identifying more people for this exit mechanism project. And I thought people would come forward and you make the information available to all and sundry and say, this is the thing. Of course, in addition to that, we'll encourage some people to actually avail themselves. In other words, we'll identify those that you encourage to avail themselves for the opportunity. How do you go about it? Are you still closing it, only making it available to those identified by yourselves, or you also make it available to people who come forward and say, look, the career prospects within the Defence Force are now limited. And what is there for me if I were to exit the system, so that people can then make an informed decision whether to exit or remain within the system. So how do you go about it? And then last week we discussed the succession planning and the career management policy within the department, and that if that was linked to the exit or mechanism, that would assist you, you know, in making an informed decision, so that you don't let go someone that you desperately need, because you'll have to replace that person immediately as he or she walks out of the door. But replacing that person with someone with not the same experience will actually compromise the capability, the operational efficiency of the department. So you make a call, as it were. I just want to understand how the two, one informs the other. The succession planning, career management policy informs you, your decision in letting go the members, either whether they came voluntarily to say we avail ourselves, or you are actually identifying them. Maybe just those two. Mr. Mara, you want to make a follow-up? It looks as though we're not going to deal with them, but with the presentation on the fourth quarter. I'm looking at the time.
Yeah. Mr. Just to follow up maybe on what you're saying, Chair, it is quite important that we need to know, in terms of the last question of yours, whether they do a proper planning, and I don't want to use this in a derogative or a negative way, but to make sure that we are exiting people that we can afford to exit or that we want to exit, and we do not have a situation where we are losing expertise, which will just, you know, be to the negative of the Defence Force, because then you sit with scarce capacity, you haven't got the knowledge, you haven't got the expertise, because they have used the opportunity of them. So, I mean, the ideal situation is to retain the most critical expertise and to basically lose people that we want to lose or that we, you know, can afford to lose. So how do we manage that? And I think then just in terms of your first question, it is just very important that we must know that all the consequences have been considered, because if we do it in a kind of a piecemeal way, then we will just find ourselves later on in a problem. Because we must remember that when the president do the authorization, he authorized an amount to be expended, what the expenditure will be. That doesn't mean it has been budgeted for. It also doesn't mean that it will be funded additional. And we know that in Vukela's case, none of that has been budgeted for or been provided for. So that is a matter that you must address to with us, please. And then whether there are communication, and I've asked that in the past and there was never a clear answer, whether it is communicated to the minister, to the president, to the minister of Treasury, a Minister of Finance, whether they are aware that we can actually not afford doing these exercises or these projects or these operations without additional funding. And we know that there's been this proudness in the Defence Force to say, we will do whatever we are instructed to do, irrespective of the funding. Fantastic attitude. It doesn't help our problem, because we will just see a less defendable or a defense capable Defence Force later on in a year or years to follow. How do we address that? And is it communicated with National Treasury and the ministers in this regard? Thank you, and the President.
And thank you very much. It's mouthful. Over to Sekdef.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of the names, maybe a brief background to what happened previously with the committee to understand how the department is now conducting it. Previously, we had these two, and unfortunately, when we made an assessment of the people who were evident at the time, it came to the attention of the department that we actually exited the people who had the skills that we most required. And it was for that reason that then the minister at the time then suspended them and requested us to make an assessment on how we were going to go forward with it without, you know, in order to exit people without compromising our operational effectiveness. That is why then we came up with the provision that was now to say it is an employer-initiated process, and by doing that, then we will be sure that we retain all the skills that we require for us to continue being operationally effective. What we do, Chair, is we look at career management, the question that we ask, and most of the people that we have identified to exit now are the people that, in terms of our career management and, you know, the number of ranks, the number of years that they have spent in their ranks, we have come to a conclusion that there is no prospect for them to progress further. And we have also come to a conclusion that while they were still on the system, they then transfer the skills to people who would then take over from them when it is necessary. So there is sufficient candidates taking into consideration, and also we were also looking at the skills, the soft skills that we need, that will then make us to continue being operationally effective. We then indicated that we will consider people from the age of 53 to 57 as the thing. We have now, you know, shifted the everything age to 58. So, which we, because in doing our assessment, it also came to our attention that those people who are the artists who are at 58 who are willing to exit. However, what we need to make sure is that it is a skills transfer before they leave the department. Thank you.
I need the sector to come in on this one. Because now I want us to, you know, be assured that if there is a delay in the implementation of this project, we know where to point the finger at. Let me tell you why I'm raising this point, sector, for the minister. I mean, if the process is employee initiated, like the general is presenting today. So it suggests to me that it will go at the pace of the employee, not at the pace of people who want to exit. And then the employer, you know, having a final way whether to release advocate Kuchu or not. You see, I want those two processes. I mean, those two approaches are not mutually exclusive. Saying, please raise your hand if you want to leave, but and still leave the actual decision, you know, with the employer whether to release me or not. But if it is the employer, I foresee the employer moving at a pace that may be informed by other reasons. Maybe they think that Cyril Xaba, let's start with those that are problematic. Problematic is Thabo Motle, Cyril Xaba, let's get rid of them first.
you know. And in other words, using
not me, only well, you.
Yeah, but yes, maybe next time when we want to consider those whose discipline is not okay for the military, we'll come to you. Yeah, but I'm saying you may actually end up with a situation where the employer is using the tool for all the wrong reasons. Maybe to target those that they want to offload from the system. Now, when you do that, it immediately gives the tool a package. Yeah, what a package? You know, the package, yeah, is the right correct term. To say, oh, if they say it's Brian Manchin, so Brian will say, ah, why me? Oh, is it because they want to offload me from the system? What have I done to be targeted for this purpose? But if you open it up, and then in the end you evaluate each case and then decide this one we let go, this one we're not going to let go for the following reason. I think in that way, it makes the process freer, free of any baggage that people may actually attach to it. Maybe some of you may want to comment on this. I foresee us in the end blaming you and saying, well, look, that you spent half of what was allocated to you, it was precisely because you were moving at a snail pace and not at the pace that is actually required to enable you to spend the money in order to get more money in the new financial year.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think that the process that you spoke about, the way you give the examples, I am told that in the department we used to exit the people that way, but also it came to a point where, remember that when you deal with this exit, we can also have a right as an employer to say, but you possess the skills that the institution needs, and we want also people to understand you before you leave. So we make sure that then you don't draw all the skills that are needed by the institution out. So it's a process that is properly thought of, and then we look at all those where we need to retain the people, and also we evaluate the ones who say that, no, we want to go. So we are able to deal with those ones. One of the challenges that we have, Chairperson, is that if you look at lower levels in the organization, we have tens of thousands of privates that are also probably in their 50s and they were authorized, and probably are not so sure what in terms of the succession planning and their promotion going up the ladder. We may just think of also refining the system so that we look at that, because part of it is that as people move, you also want to rejuvenate and bring younger people in that will grow within the system. So we have to look at that. So it is not always equal to that. If you have to exit, it can only be the people that are up, because when you look at the down at the levels at the bottom, it's congested, but there are also those where the prospects for moving up are not that much. Some of them, if you have somebody who has a private for 27 years. So what are the chances? And the person is in their 50s. So these are all the things that we need to consider. From a process point of view, Chair, the 1 billion that we have been given is an amount that we need to deal with by end of March, that is the 31st of March, because come the 1st of April, we start the new financial year, and that's where they will give us the 800 million. And to that extent, we have also now looked internally to say, where do
we get the 868 million, that would be the liability of the department to deal with the benefits of those that are exiting. And I think that in the presentation day, we have been able to give you the numbers. Now, from that billion, it affords us the exit of 600 of our members. So I think that we are on course and we will be able to deliver on that. Hence, for us to then go back and look at our reprioritization to say, where do we get the money to then put in for the liability of the department. So as far as that goes, in actual fact, our colleagues from HR, they said we will complete the process at the end of January. And then I said, but the money is given to us to finalize the process by the 31st of March. So let's allow ourselves the time until the 31st of March so that we are able to give it that. So that is as far as the issues of them go. Now, in terms of the reconciliation after the deployment, I think we can go back as far back as 3 years, Chairperson, to give you the statistics for Operation Mistral, Vigela, and Chariot. And then we should be able then to be able to make that information available to you. Chairperson, the issue of dealing with COE, if we were able to have a solution, probably we would have implemented the solution. Because the situation in which the department found itself is that, yes, there was an HR plan. And that HR plan was necessitated because the COE was the only area where the department was overspending. And just as we sold it to everybody and they got into it, then they started cutting further on the COE. Now, the point, Chairperson, where you are asking, how can we cap irregular expenditure on this? I don't think it's a straightforward answer that we can give, simply because the Department of Defense is a task-driven department. Some of the things, we never planned that we will have Operation Prosper where we had to deploy our soldiers in 8 provinces. And as we speak, we have them on standby. Because then remember that we were going towards July not so long ago and August anticipating of the Marikana and the and all those things. So they are still on the ground. As long as you have the feet on the ground, then it means that you have to pay the allowances. Now, when before the HR plan, we had 2.6 million mandates that was planned for, and we were asked to cut. It went to 1.9. As of the 31st of March of the financial year that we just came from, we were at 3.2 million per day. And that talks to the fact that to ask that we cut is not the right thing. And probably this is where it takes us, because we have even exceeded the 2.6 million days that we're planned for. Where our problem comes from, Chairperson, is when Treasury cuts the budget, they actually not only cut the on the ground, which makes it a little bit difficult when your HR budget is already cut. So it becomes difficult for us to say, how do we regularize that? We even went, when we're still at 7.4 billion, and say, can we condone? That they said, no, we will condone depending on the success you make in implementing your HR plan. We were not long even in the implementation. The past MTF, they cut 15 billion over 3 financial years. We are in the second year where they cut now 12 billion, 4 billion last year now, and then next year it's another 4 billion. So as and when the tax comes in, and I think it is even a conversation where we are saying that yes, we have to support the police if the need arises. But then really it cannot be, because there is always the constant outcry to say deploy the soldiers. But just to get the efforts and the warm bodies out there, we've already run a huge bill. So it is not that much easy. And if then our plan mandate was 1.9 and we stood at 3.2 million, then it tells you that your allowances will go up. Remember also those people, the moment they have, it means it is the rations that increase. So it's a whole host of things that go with it. So I think that it is really difficult on the part of the department to say what is it that we can do. All this is of having analyzed how things are going. That's why we then give you that projection to say, if we are allowed to implement that, then we feel that by year 24-25, we could have reduced that significantly, and then 25-26. But none of us sitting here now knows what will happen in 24-25 and 25-26 in terms of the deployment that will be needed there. So it makes it terribly difficult, Chairperson, to deal with that. So I think it's some of those things that we need to look at, and we're consistently engaging. And one of the things that we are dealing with right now, we got the information from Treasury where they are saying that Operation Vigela, in year we are not going to be able to fund you. And that is in year, it means that the next 6 months, starting from the second half of this financial year, they say they are not going to fund us. And already the soldiers are on the ground. So these are the challenges that we face. And sometimes it is not about balancing and picking the boxes, but it's a whole host of things that go into that. And it is not even all of those host of things that go into it that the department is in control over. So those are the points that I'll make a submit check, and to say that we'll get the information to yourself over these three operations over a period of 3 years, how much of the expenditure has been on. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Dr. Fuld. I appreciate that reconciliation, because we will then be in a position to join you in your fight against Treasury, because it means in the end the over expenditure that gets reported against your department. Yes, part of it is an over expenditure that is it's was within your planned activities, but part of it is over expenditure occasioned by the unfunded mandate. I think that will give us that picture, the extent to which you are underfunded. And that is the amount that really it's unfair to attribute it to as an over expenditure against the department. And then, so please, we need that information. And secondly, you confirmed to us today that the 1 billion rand affords you to release only about 600 plus employees. It can't go beyond that. And we note that because it's for the first time we're getting this information. Maybe it's because it arises from the processing of the information within the department. It's good detail we are getting. And so it means that if we get 800 million rand next year, that 8 million rand will only afford you to exit less than 600 that you are releasing this year. In the end, you see, you would have released one point something. In other words, the two allocation would have afforded you to release close to one point something members. I think 1.5 or something. I can't remember what I saw there. So no, we want to leave it at that for now, but we'll monitor the exit mechanism, this project. We would also monitor the expenditure against it. But please, it must be a two-way stream where members make themselves available. And then, of course, with you as the employer having the last say on the matter, as opposed to you particularly driving it alone. I don't think it will give you the results that you are looking for. But we want to leave it at that. You know the processes better than we do. Now, the last person to comment on this and close the discussion will be the Minister of Defence. I don't think we'll move to the next item on the fourth quarter. We'll defer it to the next meeting. Minister, the last person to comment on this. Over to you, sir. Ma'am. Thanks.
Chair, thank you very much. On the last point you make, I must say that the first big group was the employees volunteering to leave. That's when that came before me with a recommendation that said this one can't go because of this, this one can't go. So that initiative was initially grasped by the employees themselves. Even yesterday I was processing MEM. What worries me is that, in fact, the approach should be targeting where there is a bulge and also going towards where there is the signs that it's into the pocket. In other words, you're not going to target the lower ranks, even though there is a huge bulge there than at the top. But you are actually going to try and slim down the structure to the size that looks to what you are hoping for. I then wanted to come in quickly on Operation Vigenda. I do know that we have a strange situation in South Africa. The DGs, the officials meet, they discuss, they take decisions on behalf of the executive. This, which SACDEF is talking about, is a mouthing, because I have no better word, with all the respect, to put it in. It's a mouthing by the administration in Treasury to say that Vigela will not be supported coming in. This matter has been taken up, and I do want to defend my colleague in Treasury, because he has not taken that decision, neither has the head of state taken that decision. That will not happen. We have put up a fight on that, and I don't think it will happen. What must happen, though, is that I have actually promised Treasury to come in with a plan from defense that will say, this is where we want to go, this is how much it will cost us. I asked for the meeting. I am yet to confirm the meeting, because I cannot get that costed plan. That will enable me to go and say, I present the defense in the current economically depressed situation, but this is where we want to go into the future. As to the colleagues, other departments, and the employment, we have had a discussion as colleagues, where we have said, where it is a disaster, obviously none of us is going to start talking about costs. Defense must run in, it must come to the rescue. We will talk costs later. But where it can be, for instance, the police, when they took some of our facilities, they went there with conditions. One, we will not spend money fixing it for you. You will fix it for yourself. You will make it habitable. You will leave it in pristine shape, you will pay for your service. That already helps us to some extent. But what we need to do is actually enter into mini contracts with departments as we are deployed, so that we can recoup. Now, if defense wants the money back but does not enter into these simple steps, we're not going to get there. Then on the issue of the cost of employment, we're not going to be addressing this matter unless and until we admit as defense. And the problem is, if you are living in an environment and you think it is normal and it is correct, you hate it when people say there is a problem with the policies. If the policies are right, you who is supposed to be executing these policies and policing them, you are wrong, and therefore there is a problem where any private, any corporal stays for 27 years and 41 years at standstill. Then it is not the corporal or this person's problem. It is the institution's problem that is failing in its policies. And therefore, we need to be looking at a whole basket of things to correct things in defense. But it is sometimes because an outsider comes in, looks at things, says, but explain this, and there is no explanation that is given. So you continue with the way you are used to because you are comfortable. You continue and you don't want to be told because this is the way we have been running things. But in fact, I have said it quite openly and publicly that it is the department is cruel to any corporal who has spent 40 years in that situation. Because when you know that this person is not going to make it into the next two services, you do the right thing. You allow this person, when they are still agile and young enough, to go out with whatever so that they can look at another career option. You may even help them find the next career option. So the sentence has been self-inflicting. And when it is self-inflicting, everybody takes advantage of that. So I would say that I want to take the responsibility of sitting down, breaking down the defense budget, and I'm just trying to understand how we even put it together. I can tell you now, quite openly, in public, that a department that brings in a full budget and you can't even comment on it, you must sign off, is problematic. And when we look at slimming the Department of Defense, we must be looking at both sides. Right now, Chair, I think we are focusing mostly on the uniform side. We must actually, as a department, agree with Parliament on the ratios between the civilian side and the military side, and therefore slimming them accordingly, making sure that we never lose the essential services that we need, making sure that those who are there and those who are incoming are actually sharpened, availed all the opportunities so that your defense is always upward moving. It is not just about the money. It is also about being critical about your own performance and not just thinking that money solves all the problems. So there are areas where, for instance, I would be very happy, and I don't want to disrespect the HR and the deputy, but I would be very happy with getting somebody who has specialized in HR and is a civilian depth insertion at HR. Because I suspect that critical insertion might help us look differently at how things are happening there. We're looking at the issues of how we use the reserve forces and whatever, whatever. As a matter of fact, we need to go back there and criticize ourselves. Is it how we should be using it? You know me, I've been quite open about the issues of collapse. And I think that we should stop doing what we are doing. So that you give the reserve, whether quiet whilst they were in force or even as they are reserved and bettering themselves, there's more chances to come in rather than the collapse. So, Chair, I can only push it there. We've heard what you are saying, but on Vigela, I have promised the Treasury the figures that they need to make sure that that which has been preached does not come to pass, because it will surely. And yes, if we save the money that we're spending on Vigela, we can divert it to a number of things, Chair. I'm the first one to say that. But if you do that also, and South Africa gets into a worse a situation than Mozambique, we will only blame ourselves. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Minister. We'll end it on that note, but we will keep an eye on the implementation of this project We appreciate the responses from the department to all our questions. I think they were dealt with frankly and honestly, but obviously the pudding is in the eating. So it's when the reconciliation is done at the end of the financial year that will give us a picture of where we stand in terms of the numbers of members, the strength, the plan strength, as well as the success of the exit mechanism. We're going to leave it at that for today. But please, the information we requested, we appreciate that we get it as soon as possible. Maybe the last point, Minister, when are you tabling the annual report? Let me tell you why I'm asking this question. We want to take a presentation from the AG on the thing. It's on the 28th. It's not next week. It's the following week. And the AG will not come and do the presentation to the portfolio committee if the report will not have been tabled by then. I don't know if all departments or ministers have started doing the tabling. I've not seen it yet. But maybe if we hear from you or the SECDEF who are dealing with the who are scheduling and making a proposal to you, may assist to get a sense. I don't want us to arrange that meeting on the 28th and have to postpone it because you will not be ready with the tabling. Minister?
Before I come in, I see Sector send his up, Chair.
Yes.
Can I give that? Yes.
Thank you. Let's take you, Sector.
Thank you very much, Madam Minister. Chair, the annual report was tabled yesterday.
Oh, it's been tabled. Okay. Minister, Minister, thank you very much. So we'll then interact with it. So on that note, colleagues, I let me thank you, Minister, Deputy Minister, and Sector for the team for the discussion tonight. I think it was a useful, fruitful discussion. Colleagues have gone way over time. Thank you very much for accepting, for agreeing to stay on till this time. The meeting stands adjourned.
Long live the Chair.
Thank you so much, Minister. Bye.
Recording stopped.